Okay, we're going to learn the Maamar on Parshas Vayishlach. The first Maamar in the Parsha Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. So check, I got it ready. The Maamar was said on Parshas Vayishlach, I'm sure, a couple of years ago. I think in the year Tavkov Samach Tes, if I'm sure. No. Tavko Samachei. That is 201 years ago. In the year 1804. No. If now we're 2000 and... Yeah, because... No, 1805. It's before January. So what happens then? So it's 1804.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. Shifta later. It's the confusing part of it. I'm confused with that every single week when I have to say. I'm always like, how does that work? Okay. So we have another fascinating Maamar from the Alter Rebbe. Let's learn. This week in the Torah portion that we have, the Torah begins with Yaakov coming back from Lavan's house. Yaakov went to work for his wives. First, initially, he was going to take one wife, and then he ended up with four. And so he worked at Lavan's, his father-in-law's house, for 14 years. That was his the way he earned his wives, the two daughters of Lavan. And then he stayed for another 6 years, where Yaakov prospered and became very wealthy. And then at this time, he amassed a great fortune. Now he was coming back to his father's home. Last week we learned by Yaakov when he left from Be'er Sheva. This a week later, Yaakov is already coming back. 20 years have passed. Now the reason Yaakov left Haran, was two reasons. The primary reason was because he was escaping from his brother Esau. And Esau was angry at him because he stole the blessings. In his mother's direction, his mother told him to steal the blessings, so he stole the blessings. And now he was coming back. Now he figured, his mother told him, go there for a while. Till your brother's anger will subside. Yaakov was there for 20 years. By now we can assume that Esav had forgotten his animosity. Calm down. But here we find a very strange thing. We find there's a confrontation. Esav has not forgotten. Esav comes out to greet Yaakov with 400 men, and he wants to totally annihilate him and his family. He wants to have a day of reckoning with Yaakov. Now Yaakov goes. What's interesting is that it says as soon as Yaakov leaves Lavan's house, Yaakov sends messengers to Esav. I'm coming. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Yaakov sends messengers Lafanov before him, Esav Achiv, to Esav his brother, and he says, "Hey, you buddy, I'm coming. I'm on my way back." Now, what a foolish thing is that to do? Why is he provoking his brother? Why is he? Well, I mean. The Medrash compares it to a bear that was sleeping, or to a gangster that was laying on the side of the road. He was asleep, and someone went and woke him up and told him it's dangerous to sleep on the side of the road. And the guy jumped up and he attacked him. So, you know, the Medrash says, who asked you to go bother Esav? He's forgotten him. He's busy with something else. Yaakov sends messengers. And what's stranger is the content of what he sends to tell him. He says, oh, you're probably wondering where I was. I was at my Uncle Lavan's house, my Uncle Lavan. And over there, I amassed a fortune. I'm very wealthy now, and I'm coming back. So what does he think is going to be Esau's response? Obviously, this is a direct result of the blessings you stole from me that have been... So Rashi tries to say, well, these are not what my father promised me. But whatever it is, all this is not doing much good by flaunting his wealth in front of Esau's eyes. So what is this? What is Yaakov doing? So, but if we get to learn a little bit and understand all the inner hidden mystical stuff that are going on over here, then we realize, hey, this Yaakov had to do this. This was part of the plan. So let's read. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav al Esavach. Yaakov sent messengers in front, before him, al Esavach, to Esav, his brother. To understand this idea, why Yaakov is sending messengers to Esav. Hine yedua, it is known, she Yaakov shorshoi, umepchina Hashem ma, the oilom atikot. The root of Yaakov is in the name of Ma, of 45, of the world of Tikkun, the world of rectification. The Shorshoi shel Esav, and the root of Esav, umepchinas oilom atoyu. And the source and the root of Esav is from the world of chaos. Okay? So what is he saying? Yaakov stems from the world of Tikkun. The world of Tikkun, which is the name of 45, Shemma. That's the energy that dominates in the world of Tikkun. We're going to understand that in a little while. And Esav, his root is from the world of Tayu, the world of chaos. And that's where Esav stems from. Va'oida is the Tayu. And the energy of Tayu, and the lights and the energies of Tayu, hem gedoy lemiyot. They're very enormous. They're very great. V'lo yuchlu lislabish b'toich ha'kelem. And they were not able to be contained within the vessels. And therefore, v'nistalku ma'ha'kelem. They departed from the vessels. V'hen b'chenes ma'kifim. And they went back to a state of encompassing energy. Because they couldn't be contained. They couldn't be internalized. Because the vessels couldn't contain them. What happened to the vessels? Because the vessels couldn't contain the light, v'akelim nishbaru, and the vessels broke, they shattered, v'naflu lamata, and they fell down below. L'chein, therefore, ha'ye Esav shalamata rasha. And that is why Esav, down here below, turned out to be a rasha, a wicked person. Avol, that's only Esav as he is below. Avol mitzad shoy rishorshoy. But if we're going to trace Esav back to his roots, where Esav originates in the divine, in the divine paradigm, in the realms of divinity of God. Right? So Esav's root of root, his source of sources, way, way, way back, is b'makifim de Tayu, are in the encompassing energy of Tayu, of the world of chaos. And areya oides de Tayu ham lemailam oides de Tikkun. And the energy of Tayu is far superior and higher than the light of Tikkun. K'moshi yisbar l'kama be'ezes Hashem yisbarach, as he's going to explain later, Ezra Hashem in the next Maimer, Vayikach Abba Minabba Biyadi Mincha, Kemoshin Isbar Gamkin, Bepashas Terldus, Alpasik Rei, Reiach Beni. The source of Tayu is much higher than the source of Tikkun, the world of Tayu. Tayu is a very potent light, a very potent energy. So Esav's source is in a very high place.
Hold
on, we'll talk. We'll get there. And Yaakov is only from the world of Tikkun. What?
I know.
We're going to explain.
What those sources
are? Yeah. That's right. Vihine. Okay. Alright, so you're asking for some commentary, right? Alright. So in order to understand these four lines, we can talk for at least an hour and a half. But let's see if we can condense it a little. There is our world. There is the world as we know it today, our reality. And the Kabbalists, which I already mentioned even before the Kabbalists, but the Kabbalists elaborate on this idea, that our world was preceded by another world, a different, a higher existence. This is the world that we're speaking about that preceded our world. It wasn't a physical reality, it wasn't the physical world, it was a world of spiritual content. That's what the world consisted of. They were a combination of various spiritual energies, and that's what represented that world. But that world didn't last. Didn't have any permanence. That world was a chaotic world. It wasn't an organized, synchronized world. And that is why that world shattered and it collapsed. And then God reconstructed and he made a different world. This is hinted to in the concept of, at the onset of creation, it says, Va'aretz hosa tohu vavohu. The earth was chaotic. So what is that? In the second verse in Genesis, in Bereshit, is the word earth was tohu vavohu. What's tohu vavohu? The world was in a state of chaos. Presenting that world. It's also spoken about in the Medrash. In the early days, God, God created worlds and He destroyed them. Created worlds and He destroyed them. And the Arizal says that God created, after these worlds collapsed, God reconstructed the world based on the shards, on the materials of Tayu, those materials that have gone haywire, that have broken up. The world of Tikkun comes to rectify that world. So what does this mean? What is this shattered world of Tayu, and the new world of Tikkun, the world of rectification? Generally, we know that all of existence works in a system of oir v'keli, light and vessels, energy and containers. That is a concept that holds true, or a reality that's true in every level, in every creation, in every being, in all of existence. There is the energy and there is the keli, there is the vessel. For example, ourselves. There is the soul is the energy, and the body is the vessel, the container. The soul is a source of all life, but the body gives it, through the body, it becomes, the body is the container that gives it a certain particular limited form of life, which we call physical existence. The soul is more of an abstract, limitless being. When the soul comes into the body, the body contains the energy of the soul, so that it the soul, the energy, the powers of the soul function, but they function in a limited physical form. Physical one. That's the container, which is the body. Same is also, for example, every articulated idea, every concept of the idea, has within itself an oir and a keli. What is the oir? The oir is the idea, the intellect, the concept that's in it. And the keli are the words that contain the idea, the letters that comprise words, or the sentences that contain the idea, that give expression to the idea. That is the containers, that is the vessels. Now, we know that generally there is a balance between the energy and the vessel. In order for it to be a vessel, it has to be broad enough, the vessel and the energy has to be compatible with each other. Because if they're incompatible, then they can't last. So the compatibility between a proper balance between the energy and the vessel. However, there is this concept, this thing that so we say that when God created the world initially, when He extended the energy for creation, also that energy also came in the form of an energy and a vessel in containers. By God, it's sort of like this. We speak about every world. The building blocks of creation are the Eser Sefirot, the 10 attributes through which God, manifests Himself, expresses Himself to the creation. So there too, we have the oir, the energy that is contained in the attributes, and then you have the vessels, the kalim. The kalim of the attributes, by God, it's sort of the mere fact that they have a certain character, that is already the vessel, because God Himself is beyond any specific character, beyond any specific flavor. He is infinite, undefined, and uncharacterized. So the fact that there is in God specific, God's kindness, His love, His power of discipline, and His wisdom, and His compassion, this is already giving a certain seer, it's giving a certain form to a formless energy. So these are called kalim, these are called vessels. So in the world of Tayu, this world is chaotic world, we're also Eser Sefirot, 10 attributes. But the 10 attributes, the energy was too intense for the vessels, and the vessels broke. They shattered, like they blew a fuse. What does it mean? Like we find in our, and by us too, there is such a concept. The Talmud tells us that there were four people who went to explore the deepest mysteries of existence. There was Rabbi Akiva, Ben Zoma, Ben Azai, four great scholars that went into the orchard. They call it the orchard, means they went into the paradise. Paradise, the orchard of the deepest Jewish esoteric and Jewish mysticism. Now, being that this is extremely intense, because they wanted to comprehend the most incomprehensible things, so what happened was, it was tragic. Three of them three of them experienced what we call Shviras HaKelim. One of them died, just their body couldn't contain the intense light that they were to perceive. The other one went crazy, and the other one became a heretic. They couldn't handle it. So the idea, especially Ben Zayim, I think, who went crazy, Nivka, he snapped, because his mind was not able to, his physical brain was not able to contain these lofty, incredible, powerful ideas. So he snapped. So you didn't have a case where the Kaili is not a... Also sometimes you have within a human being that a person hears a shocking news, extremely shocking news, that's too intense. Sometimes it can be extremely good news. You hear something something so incredibly good that has come about your way, where the heart is just overly excited, and God forbid a person the heart can't contain it and can have a heart attack or something like that. Just too intense. Or God forbid on the opposite, a person hears news or something that is extremely, some terrible tragedy that has occurred. Like it says by Sarah, when she heard about the Akedas Yitzchak, that Avram was going to slaughter her one and only son Yitzchak, she couldn't take it and she died. So that was because what we call a Shiras HaKeinim. She couldn't contain the intense bitterness or whatever it was from losing her child, one of her only child she's been waiting for. So that was intense. Also, in the physical sense, sometimes if you experience a very, 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 very powerful light, the eyes cannot contain the brightness. The person can be blinded, it's called a blinding light. Eyes can be damaged permanently. Go blind from what? From two of an intense light, or a person can bust their eardrums of two of a high, loud noise. So these are all examples of a keli, of a vessel that cannot contain the energy that's within it. So too, in that original primordial world, the original world that God created, the energy that God imbued into the vessels couldn't contain the divine energy. And they burst and they shattered. When they burst and they shattered, what happened? Being that the energy had no container, so it had nowhere to manifest itself, so it was reabsorbed in God. It was reabsorbed in its source. Meaning, the energy of Torah was originally a transmission. God was transmitting an energy for the universe to create the world. But the vessels that were there to give them some form, to give them some content, to give them, like a cookie cutter, to cut it in a certain specific form, couldn't contain it. It just burst because of the intensity of it. So the oil had no keli. When a light doesn't have a keli, it goes back to itself. But the vessel shattered. To give a little bit of an example, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, also in one of the shirim, I think 2 weeks ago. The idea, the example of Shviras HaKelim is, what do we mean vessels breaking? And the vessels break. You have an idea, you have a concept that is contained in a sentence. Let's take any concept. Let's say the concept of gravity. Everything that goes up comes down. Okay, that concept is as it was. You know, whoever made that observation and coined it in that phrase, whatever goes up will come down. So now, what happens if those letters of that idea? Now, when these letters are organized and together, they form the words that contain the idea. But if those letters get disoriented, and those letters they get separated from each other. So first of all, if you just take the words and you separate them from each other, so what are you left with? You lost the concept. Because you just have a word up, and you have a word whatever, and these whatever and up are not together, so, or goes, you have nothing. But those words still contain some meaning. They contain some something, because whatever means something, and up means something, and down it has. How about if you break the letters themselves, separate the letters, so it's just a W and an A, and they get scattered around. So then you lose even the little meaning that was there before. Even that is lost, because the idea doesn't have any vessels anymore, right? So even that, and the little idea that you can make, the little concepts that are contained in each word is also disappeared. then if you take, but a letter still has some content. After all, this is a P and this is a Q and this is an I. If you break the letters up further, and they where you just have a stick, a line this way or a half a circle this way, then you don't have anything. Then it loses all content and all meaning and anything whatsoever. Now, but here's the thing: when you have this idea, someone came up with a brilliant idea and he put it into a phrase. And then someone comes and cuts that that sentence up, those little letters, and scatters it all over the seven seas. So the idea is lost, and this person who came up with the idea died, isn't there anymore. So what happened? It's not that the idea is gone. The idea as a concept exists with or without the vessels, with or without it. It's only that it's not anchored down. There's no phrase that can hold it. But the idea is a truth. It's a certain truism that exists. Whatever goes up, comes down, is true, whether someone thought of it or didn't think of it, someone put it into words or not. So that's what we mean over here, that the oir is the tayu, the energy of tayu, by the collapsing of the vessels, the energy of tayu went up, meaning the idea is still there, but it didn't have any, doesn't have any vessels. What happened to the vessels? The vessels are like those letters that get scattered and the earboard. But you still have something, because these are letters that once contained the idea. And that's the idea of what we say, Shviras HaKedem. Now, why was there a Shviras HaKedem? Why did God initially extend or project from Himself energies in order to create a world when He knew that those energies cannot be sustained, cannot be contained in the vessels, that it would be too intense? That seems to be something that isn't too, you know, when a human being does that, it's because a person can miscalculate. He didn't realize how intense that thing is. But God, who didn't miscalculate, so it wasn't a mistake that God tried and He failed and now He's trying to repair that which He messed up the first time. It wasn't a mess up. If there was this shattering of the vessels, it must be that it was intentional. And it was intention. What was the intention of first creating an energy of bringing out, emanating an energy of tayu, which can't be contained by the vessels? And that is because what God desired to have a world of darkness. God desired that there should be a world that is separate from Him. A world that can even act in total defiance to Him. Incomplete, a world that can ignore Him, a world that can rebel against Him. And God wanted that we should transform that lowly, ungodly world into a home for God, into a world that submits itself and reflects the truth of its Creator, mirrors and reflects the truth of its Creator. But God wanted that should be our toil, that should be our accomplishment. So but the world as it was created, Hashem wanted it to be detached from Him, separated from Him, existing seemingly as an autonomous, independent reality, and that reality should find its way back to God. That's the challenge of creation, and that's man's. And God wanted man to play a pivotal role in bringing creation to its ultimate perfection. So He created the world dark, and our job, our objective is to transform darkness into light. The question is, how are we going to get to darkness? How are we going to get to those forces of evil, to the forces of negativity, to forces that they are diametrically opposed or antithetical to God? If God is the source of all existence, and God is the energy beyond every being, and God imbues every being with its existence every moment that it exists, so how can an existence turn around and God forbid, spit Hashem in the face, say to God, you know what, I don't, you know, turn around and in defiance of Him, if God is creating it. So if every being emanates from Him, how can we ever get to a being that is so ungodly, that is oblivious to God, and therefore acting in a way contrary to God's will, if God is the source of its very existence? And therefore, truth, if the process of creation would evolve stage by stage, if the energy would progress stage by stage, the energy would go farther to create forms of being, higher creations that are submissive to Him, higher creations that acknowledge Him, and then continue on creating lower forms, lower creations, lower beings, and farther and farther, it would evolve and evolve and evolve. Even if it would evolve to the farthest evolving, to the most distant creation, even those creations would still retain some godly awareness. They would still sense that they're a purposeful creation created by God to serve Him. There wouldn't be that breakaway. In order to create creations, to create that schism, that breakaway, that total separation, you need to have tearing the creations away from the Creator completely. For that, the creations had to be flung far off, not in a manner of consequential progression, where one brings about the next, where there is cause and effect. That couldn't happen. And that's the idea of the Shviras HaKelim. In the Shviras HaKelim, the intensity of it broke it and shattered it, that we can, just like when something explodes, the shards of the explosion, the pieces, the glass, or whatever it is, can be found 3 blocks away, far away, because the explosion is so intense. So too, in order to shatter the creations, that they should be flung into an existence that is so dark and so far from Hashem, from God's light, and so it can only come about through Shviras HaKelim. So these little pieces, that's what serves as the energy behind, that becomes the kernel and the germ of all negative beings, of all evil, and all everything that is ungodly in the world. Are their energy stems from these broken shards, these broken vessels from the world of Tayyum. Now, which means an interesting thing, that even though our creation is a world of Tikkun, Klipa stems from that world. Just I want to wait a minute. After the shattering of the vessel, right? God reintroduced a new light, an energy that is far more measured, that is far more contained, that is compatible with the vessels. He also created different types of vessels, broader vessels, vessels that could contain the light, and the light itself was already contracted and limited so that it can fit the vessels. And that new energy is responsible for the creation as we know it. However, when we say that the creation as we know it now is the creation of Tikkun, it's not a total new creation. It's not like Tayyu happened once and then Tayyu was erased and now there's a new world, a new world of Tikkun. Because then there would be no purpose for that explosion of Tayyu. That would have just been something that existed temporarily, and for what purpose? So the reason was the Tayyu is that there should be the elements of Tayyu should be contained within our new world. Which means that our world that we have now is really a blend of Tayyu and Tikkun. The actual creation of the world came through the energy of Tikkun, but it was created with material from those broken shards, from those broken pieces, and from sparks from the world of Tayyum. And that is why there are chaotic beings within this world, that when you look at the world, some parts of the world look like a jungle, some elements within the world don't seem to fit with a godly, with a world that we can imagine that God would have created. They seem to stick out. They seem to be like a thorn in creation. It's because they're those pieces of Tayyu that have been spread in a seemingly random form, disorganized, disjointed, because that's the idea of an explosion. When something explodes, it doesn't shatter the pieces in a form, but things just seem to exist. The pieces are totally disorganized, disoriented. Now, one of the distinctive factors between the world of Tayyum and the world of Tikkun, which is important to know so that we can proceed in understanding the Maimon, is that the character of Tayyum, besides the fact that we say that in Tayyum the energy was too intense for the vessels and the vessels shattered, the emanations, the spheros, the attributes of Tayyum just like there was an incompatibility between the energy and the vessel, there was also an incompatibility and an intolerance between one emotion and the other emotions. Which means all the attributes of Tayyu were distinct, discrete, extreme, radical expressions that left no room for combinations, for temperament with something else. They were intolerant. They were completely radical in who they were. What do I mean by that? Primarily, the world, the two dominant forces in creation is the force of Chesed and the force of Gevura. All of existence operates on these two forces of Chesed and Gevura. Chesed is God's, is the energy of giving, of benevolence, of generosity, of transmitting, of love, of kindness, of giving, right? Gevura is the energy of discipline, of restraint, of judgment, and so forth. And these are the two forces, the two primary forces within creation. And the human being also operates on these two, onto what motivates all of our activities, what energizes and everything we do is we're attracted to something, we're drawn to something, we open up to something, we give to it, we love it, or we're running away from something, or we're withdrawing into ourselves away from it. So these are the two main forces of existence, Chesed and Gevura. In the world of Tayu, Chesed, the energy of Chesed was pure Chesed, pure unadulterated Chesed. It didn't have any vestige of Gevura whatsoever. The Chesed was infinite kindness on only, we can say, like a single track minded. It had no ability to think but to operate in any other thing but kindness. Which means, in contrary to emotions that we know today, our emotions. Our emotions, because they're human emotions, so they stem more from the world of tikkun. So the emotions that we experience today are all composites. Meaning every emotion is a blend between various different emotions. For example, we experience love. We experience love for our children. And therefore we want to give. But even in that givingness, and even in that generosity that we want to give and be kind to our children, there is a certain limit. Because we realize that giving and giving and giving is going to end up spoiling the child. So we need to temper the giving with a certain amount of discipline, with a certain amount of restraint. Me as a parent, I want to give my children everything. I want to give them all the cookies in the cookie jar. But I know if I give them all the cookies in the cookie jar and I really think these cookies are wonderful and I love my child and I'm delighted in watching my child experience the sensation of the cookie and therefore I want to see him eat all the cookies because that gives me incredible nachas, but I realize that, well, that my child is going to be sick and have a stomachache. So therefore, and even though the child won't know when to stop, and he's going to say, give me, give me, give me, there's a point where I close the cookie jar, and I say, no, I can't give you. So the love is tempered and controlled and blended with Gevura. The same is also on the opposite. When we discipline, and we have experienced judgment and discipline, it's also not pure judgment. Let's say even in human discipline, you know, when we feel that we need to hold a criminal accountable and we need to punish them and so on and so forth, there is a certain blend of mercy, a certain amount. In other words, even criminals have rights. They have a right to a lawyer. They have a right for certain human dignity, for certain rights that are given them. It's not like all around, you know, he's a killer, we're going to kill him without any. There is considerations. There is certain rights. For example, this week when they put this guy to death. So they the way they killed him is by putting him to sleep. So there is a certain mercy in the act of killing. Now that is according to the Torah, because according to the Torah, when they administered skila, sreifa, harik, chenek, even according to the, when they put someone to death, they would put the person to death. They would give him to drink something before, so that the person shouldn't have that full intensity. And it goes into all kinds of halachas. Which go v'haftal areyach kamaycha berar loy nisayacha. Even when you're killing a murderer, you have to choose a nice death. Of course, meaning the nicest way, the gentlest way that you avoid unnecessary pain and unnecessary discomfort. Certain amount of pain that the Torah says the person deserves in order to cleanse himself, but there is a certain temperament of it. Meaning, even in extreme judgment, there is that little blend and harmony or synchronized with it. That is human emotion. In what's it called again, in the world of Tayu, it doesn't work that way. In the world of Tayu, it is pure, the love, the kindness is pure kindness. To give endlessly, without an end. Discipline, judgment is pure judgment without any considerations of kindness or mercy. Pure, just a similar illustration in our world of emotions, of tayudigi emotions, of emotions that have that tayu flavor to them, is if we look at animals. The instinctive emotions of animals are extremely pure and one-side and one-track minded. When an animal has a specific nature, let's say a charging bull. A bull is an enraged creature. Generally, if you don't mess with them, it's okay. But if the bull gets angry and the bull is charging, the bull is completely incapable of stopping and considering any merit for the one that ticked them off. It has absolutely to think that what? That you know what? True, I'm angry at him now, but he has been so kind to me and has been taking care of me from the day I'm born, and he's been giving me my hay and my whatever, my food and all that. That's irrelevant. It's impossible for that, because when it's an anger, it's only a mode of anger, nothing else. Those are the animals, and you see that, and all their emotions are taken to the extreme without any temperament. Even in human beings, you find children. Children are also in a semi-animal state. The immaturity of a child is that when they experience a specific emotion, when they have a craving for something, a desire for something, they won't stop. They literally won't stop. They'll kick, they'll scream, they'll throw a temper tantrum. They must have what they have. And even when they're realizing, as a result of that, they're losing this and they're losing that, and they can't, because now you can't reason with them. When they're charged with an emotion, that's the only thing. When they get angry, when they feel a certain animosity or a hatred towards someone, when someone bothered them, it can be their best friend, it can be someone, I'm never going to talk to you ever again, get out of here, I hate you, go out of my life. They're incapable of right? So that's the singularity, the discreteness and intensity and the radicalness of their emotion. Not the inability to blend and to harmonize the various different emotions and realize it's true, like an adult is different. You know, when I get angry at someone, I'm upset, but then I realize that there is still a redeeming quality to that person. So or when I'm acting in a loving way, I know when, as we said before, the father knows when to stop, when not to give, when this is being harmful to the child. So that's that proper blend. Now, so what exactly? So we say Tayu was singular. The emotions were raw and unmixed. In Tikkun, the emotions are combined. They interact one with each other. They blend with each other. What really is the distinction? What makes that in Tayu we have single tracked or single mode emotions, and in Tikkun we have a cohesiveness and a blend of the various different emotions? Let's take a look at what the difference is between a human being, a child, or an animal. What is the differentiating quality that a human being has over the animal, or even over a little child? And that is the mind. It's the seichel. It's the mind. So what do you see from here? That the intellect and the mind is what is responsible for this blended, for these emotions that are for controlled emotions. Animals have instinctive emotions, pure instinctive emotions. Human beings have intellectual emotions. And a child also has instinctive emotions. Instinctive emotions are uncontrolled, and therefore they are what they are without the ability for them to blend. The intellectual emotions are carefully combined and woven together from various different emotions. So the intellect has that ability to bring, and the reason for that is because intellect is, why is it that intellect has that ability to curb, to control, and to, we can say, synchronize the emotions? What's the power of the intellect to have that influence on the emotions? That is due to the fact that emotions are extremely self-centered. An emotion is all about me. What I feel, what I love, what I want, what I hate. In an emotion, you must have self-awareness, because that's the nature of the emotion. I'm excited about something. So there is a strong attachment to oneself, or one experience of oneself in an emotion. The mind is the exact opposite. The true aspect of intellect is self-effacement, self-nullification, the selflessness. That's the character of the mind. What's the mind? The mind is the ability to be able to observe and perceive reality as it is, not tainted with any personal preferences or personal biases. Emotions are all about how I feel. That's why emotions are subjective to self. When you have, for example, any family dispute or any business dispute or any argument, or whatever it is, in order to be able to, you want to sort it all out. So who do you have to go to? You know that anybody that is involved, that have, we call it in this, someone that has negias, meaning someone who has a personal interest in it, you can't come to them and ask and gain clarity. Why? Because whatever they're going to say, even when they're going to say seemingly, they seem to come to it rationally, unexcited, calmly, based on what they, it's not true. Why? Because they're tainted by their emotions. Because they have an emotional connection to it, so they can't give an unbiased opinion. It will always be. So in order, you have to go to an arbitration, or for someone to solve it, you have to go to someone who is completely uninvolved, and they can look at it as is, without any personal preferences, without any biases, without anything. That's the ability. So the mind is that ability to look and perceive things with, to be selfless. It's not about me, not how I think, it's truth. I want to know truth for the sake of truth, and God has endowed us with that unique capability of mind. Mind is the idea of self-suspension, forgetting about oneself, transcending oneself, opening up to the reality bigger than myself. Emotions are me, how I feel. An emotional response to something is it good for me, is it bad for me? An intellectual response is, let's get to know the facts. What are the facts completely removed if I retake myself out as it is? So intellect is humble, has humility, meaning a lack of self, and emotion is full of ego. Emotion is full of self. Now, that's why, even when you have an intellectual emotion, okay, you have an emotion governed by the intellect, meaning the mind tells you, the mind the mind explores, the mind investigates, and the mind finds a certain thing, and the mind directs you, and the mind says, this is good, you should be pursuing so and so. So here you have an emotion that didn't just come naturally, instinctively, it was produced and created by the mind. Now here's an interesting thing, this is really a paradox, because the mind and the emotion are two opposites. The mind is to be able to see things as they are, calmness, not being. The emotion is the exact opposite. Emotion is meaning get involved and be vulnerable and be subjective to it, not objective. So the emotion and the mind really are two opposing forces. But nevertheless, when the mind does create an emotion, which is human emotions, which are created, as we're going to see soon, it's not really created, but we're going to speak about that a little later. So when the mind creates emotions, the emotions are not so egocentric like animal emotions. Why? Because they're influenced with the bittul, with the nullification, with the selflessness of the mind. Now, because the mind in its inherent nature is selfless, the mind is not about me, the mind is the transparency of a person to be able to be transparent and not noticed, and be the self-effacement. So that introduces that bittul, that nullification into the emotion. That even though an emotion requires ego, even though an emotion requires a feeling of self, because it has to be your feeling for something. I love it. If it's not I, if it's just about it, and it's just truth, then there's no emotion. Emotion means I'm excited because I feel a connection to it.
or I'm running away from it. So the emotion requires an ego, but that ego is limited, which means that the ego is, because there is a certain purposefulness into the emotion. The mind says, this is good, this is correct, now love it. But the mind sees the greater picture, so it directs the emotion, and it says, love to the degree that the love is beneficial. It gives a certain context to the emotion. It doesn't allow the emotion to totally get carried away with its own ego, with its own, you know, this is what I feel, this is what I want, and therefore, no matter what. It's like, as Friedman always says, like the husband who says, shut up, I love you. Because he's busy loving. He's busy loving, and therefore, the recipient of the love, it doesn't matter. So that's the idea of the emotions of Tayu. The emotions of Tayu being that they're not influenced by the mind. Therefore, there is no bittul. If there is no bittul, that is... So the power of the mind, the power of tikkun is... That's why we say that the power of the world of tikkun, the second order, the order of tikkun that evolved after the second stage in creation, the world of tikkun, he said over here, that's the energy of the name ma, shame ma. What does ma mean? Ma means what? What meaning lacking substance, lacking ego, lacking a self. The energy of tikkun is the energy of the intellect, the energy of the mind. That's why the world of tikkun is dominated by the energy of chachma. What is chachma? Chachma is koyachma. It's the power to transcend yourself. It's the power to see things for what they are, to relate to reality as it is, without a personal bias, without your personal taking it just how it feels to you, as things really are. That is why the human being, who is the one who possesses this power of intellect of the mind, is called Adam. And what is Adam? Adam is Aleph Dalet Mem. Aleph Dalet Mem is 45, the numeric value of Ma. Because that is the human contribution. That's what makes the human being unique and special, is that the human being has that Adam, that power of Ma in his life, that he doesn't act just instinctively of what feels good for me and what I like, but a human being is able to curb his appetites, curb his things, for the betterment of life. What is the difference between the animal world and a civilized world? What's the difference? The difference is one thing. In a civilized world, or a world of human beings, even though I might have appetites and I might have desires and lusts and cravings to eat, to swallow you up, I am hungry today, so why can't I eat you for dinner? Because I'm able to think a little larger than that. Because if I eat you, then tomorrow you might eat me. So there is a certain, or someone, you won't eat me, but then someone else, your cousin, will eat me. So if there will be that, meaning one is able to think beyond the here, the now, what I want right now. You can see a greater picture. Okay, that's ultimately also selfish, because I'm not going to eat you because you're not going to, but that's at least to a certain degree looking beyond my instant gratification, my instant force. I can see more than that, and therefore I can surrender my personal gain and benefit that my emotion is feeling right now for a greater good. And that's the uniqueness, that's the contribution of humanity, to be able to, and that's why human beings can live in communities, they can live in societies. That's the very fabric of a society. The fabric of it is that we have a mind, and we have the mind, we can create an environment based on our minds, on how we interact with our emotions, of course, because the drive beyond all human beings, the drive beyond all human activity is emotions. But these emotions are guided and directed by the intellect, and the intellect is that ability of self-suspension. The ability of ma, the power of what? That's the dominant force in the world of tikkun. In the world of tayu, what is the world of tayu? The world of tayu is not influenced by intellect. It's the pure emotions. So let's go back to God's emotions of chesed and gevurah. The chesed and gevurah that originally emanated from God at the onset of creation. The chesed was pure chesed. When the chesed left no room for gevura was because there was a certain ego to that chesed. You're talking about God's emotion of chesed. You're talking about Hashem's kindness. But there was an ego to that. What do you mean the kindness? The love and the kindness that emanated from God didn't see itself as a purposeful existence that needs to serve a higher interest in the divine reality, but rather it saw love as the ultimate thing. It had self, it got self-absorbed in its own mode. It became all about love. Instead of realizing that the reason there is this love and generosity is so that we can create a world. So it wasn't interested anymore in creating a world. It was just about expressing love. The world, the recipient, can't contain that love. It's too awesome. It's too powerful. It's too great. The heck with it, you say. The main thing is the love needs to just be expressed. The love has to go, and there's no end to how far God's love has to move. Same is also with Gevurah. Instead of them being nullified to their source, meaning, after all, there is a source, God is emanating these emotions, they began to see themselves as the point, not as a means to an end, but as an end unto itself. So they themselves possessed an ego. Again, they were talking about extreme levels of holiness over here. But nevertheless, an ego of a certain self then, and therefore, an interesting thing, even when they collapse and the energy of Toyu goes away because the vessels couldn't contain that energy and the shards have fallen, what is the staple of any aspect of Klipa, which we spoke earlier is a derivative from these energy of Toyu? What is their staple? What is the fingerprint of Toyu? What is the flavor or something of Toyu is that they're that Klipa, that all these entities are also self-absorbed. All they can think of are themselves, and they act only for their own benefit. And that's why we say the ultimate characteristic of Klipa is have, give me. To me, I want everything myself. Because it becomes focused. It doesn't see beyond its own shell. It can only know of self and want. That's the ultimate character of these fallen sparks. Because even in their divine source, there was a certain ego to it, which is that love was all about love, instead of it being able to harmonize with Gevurah, because they realized that we both are serving a higher purpose, so we have to unite and merge together. Each one was on their own. So the energy of Toyu is that the tikkun, the human being, particularly the Jewish people that are sent into the world, which the Jew is Atem Kuriyim Adam. We know that real Adam, the name Adam, is reserved mainly for the Jewish people, because even though human beings in general can act unbiased and can sort of act objectively to something, but really in truth, even objective behavior and unbiased behavior of human beings, even that is to a certain, it also has a certain tinge of biasness, a certain things of self. As we said before, the reason I'm not going to eat you is because tomorrow I'm going to afraid someone is going to eat me. So the respect that we have for each other and all the laws and order is not because an intrinsic recognition that we all have a justified existence and God created us all and so forth. Rather, it's just a way that we can compromise and work together. So it is looking a little bit beyond the me and the now, but it's not ultimately looking beyond me and the now, because again, it's mainly for me. The Jew brings to the world a whole different thing. Jew brings God to the world. The Jew brings an awareness that creation is purposeful and God created you and God created me and we're all part of a bigger symphony. We're all part of a bigger plan. And therefore we have all the right to exist and we all need to act in together and respect each other and work together. Each one could contribute that which they need to contribute and so forth to the ultimate plan of this. That comes from the Jewish people to the world. Today, this has been influenced already so much of society, some people, that recognition that I'm not here to serve myself, but I'm here to serve something bigger than myself, the power of Ma, the power. These two energies, the force of Tayu and the force of Tikkun, find their manifestation or expression and embodiment in these two characters of Yaakov and Esau. Here you have the extreme example of the energy of Tayu and the energy of Tikkun. Rivka has a struggle going on in her stomach, a fierce battle, and then she gives birth. Who is the one who is born first? We learned earlier, Toyu comes before the world of Tikkun. That's why Esau is the one who comes out first. In Esau we find that he is an emotional beast. Esav is a monster, he's a cruel killer or murderer. He acts completely obsessive, compulsive on his emotions, without any consideration, to the point that he's even willing to give up his firstborn rights of everything for a plate of lentil soup. Because he needs that now, and there's nothing else. You see the extreme lack of intelligence. Now, he was a bright man, but when his emotions kicked in, the only thing that was there in his mind is lentil soup. The whole world can go jumping away. Doesn't make a difference. This is what's going to happen. A minute later, he'll realize that this was a rotten deal. Doesn't make a difference. That's that single-track mind in and of Esav. And then you see constantly, he's in that. And that's why he's red. Because red represents excitement. Excitement means the kach, the force of the emotions. So Esav hu Edom. Yaakov is the exact opposite. Yaakov is the father of the Jewish people. Yaakov is Ishtam Yoshev Aholim, the man of study, the man of cognitive introspection, of understanding, of scholarly wisdom. And Yaakov studies and learns, and he acts based on his mind, based on what he sees as right and correct. That's why Yaakov is born second, because the energy of Tikkun comes after the energy of now Esav, of course. And here you see another interesting thing. The world of Tayu, as it is down here, is in a very negative state. And originally, the world of Tayu preceded the world of Tikkun, meaning the divine energy that was in Tayu is superior to the energy of Tikkun. But in this world, Tayu collapsed, and Tayu was in a pathetic state, in a fallen state. That's why Esav, as he mentions over here, Esav was a Rasha. Why was he a Rasha? Because he was disconnected completely from God. He had no awareness or connection to serving Hashem. He was living his own autonomous existence. I'm here to eat and drink, and what did Esav say? Let's eat, and tomorrow I'm going to die. He said that. Why do I need the Bechayra? Tomorrow I'm going to die. So it's all about eat and drink and have a good time, because tomorrow we die, so let's have a good time now. Meaning he didn't see beyond the materialistic or physical life. Now, Yaakov, however, the world of Tikkun is not a collapsed world. So the world of Tikkun is still connected to its source. So Tikkun has that vision and that thing. So Yaakov is a holy, is the one that is living with a purpose, with a plan, and so forth. And now, based on this, we're going to understand basically the whole Maamar really is going to be based on these fundamental principles that we just spoke about. But I just want to bring out one more point, and that is that when we spoke about that human emotions are tikkun emotions, and their emotions created by the mind. In truth, there's no such a thing as really emotions created by the mind, because the mind and emotions are two opposites, and the mind can create an emotion. We see that even human beings, even though we have emotions that we hope are intellectual emotions that are guided by the vision and the reasoning of one's mind, but nevertheless we realize that that's not really the source of our emotions. Because the source of our emotions are what? Are just instinctive emotions. Because we have, for example, a child. When we're a child, in a human being, you don't have to wait till you mature to start having emotions. Until then, you're just batteries, dead. Quite on the contrary. Children have very powerful emotions. And the emotions are there. It's only that what happens, once a person gets older, the mind begins to exercise control over the emotions, to the point where the mind can have that degree of control that the emotions seem to be born from the mind. But they're not really born from the mind. On the one hand, it seems like emotions come from the mind, because what triggers your interest in something? You become first cognitively aware of it. You become intellectually have an awareness of that, and you get to understand and appreciate its qualities, you get to appreciate its value and so forth, and then suddenly you start feeling a draw, a pull towards that thing. So it seems like, generally in Kabbalah we call, in Tanya, we refer to the intellect as parents, and the emotions are called children, because they're born out of the intellect. And the more one understands something, then later one evolves and creates an emotion towards it. But really, it's not that way. Really, the emotions, really, there is a fire, there is passion within a human being that's just there. There's a natural embedded in passion within a human being. A human being has very deep power of a certain of discipline or fear and so forth that is contained within a human being. Now, what the mind does is the mind is mainly only a guide, a director. The mind shows the emotions where should you direct your passion. The passion is really there. Your passion, you want things that are good for you, but you don't know what's good for you. You can make a mistake. Some people, or a person who's not influenced by the mind, right, doesn't exercise the control of their mind, just allows, remains immature and allows the emotions just to grow like a garden that is not being tended by a gardener and so on, where we're just getting wild weeds. So they will have emotions, and but it's going to be wild. So the mind guides the emotions to express themselves or to be experienced in a healthy, constructive manner. So the mind is the director. It's the guide. It doesn't create. But when the mind does that, here's an interesting thing. When the mind does that, in the process of doing that, it needs to stop the emotion. In other words, as we said before, the emotions are embedded very, very deep within the inner psyche of the human being. That's where the emotions come from. And over there, the emotions are explosive. The emotions are intense. They're uninhibited. They're raw energy that can just go on and just go on infinitely. I mean, have to expand without any limitation. The mind is what? Is a filter. The mind is a restrainer. When the emotion, let's say the passion, the human passion wants to express itself as is, the mind stops it and says, hold it, stop. What is it that you want? Is it correct? Is it right? It allows the emotion to pass through, but only through a serious scrutiny and discrimination of the mind. When the mind does that, it's allowing the emotions through, but the emotions are only coming through a tiny little keyhole. So what kind of emotions do you have? Once they come through that keyhole, according to what the mind has let it pass through, tiny, minute emotions. Emotions that are far weaker. That's why we see, where is their intensity? An animal, when it has passion, when an animal experiences, its passion is explosive. A human being's emotion is what? Temperate and weak. So the influence of the mind on the emotion is that it's not allowing the essential raw energy of the soul that one has, the wellsprings of emotional energy which are connected to the inherent inner character and structure of the soul, for it to be expressed, because the mind stands and blocks, and only a tiny little bit. That's why we see that. What you see, an interesting thing, people that are not, don't live their lives according to their mind, they're more emotional people. So and then in their lives there is a lot of passion, there's a lot of energy. People that are extremely disciplined, people that are extremely intellectual and this and that, there's a certain mellowness and dullness in there. They're just, because everything is dull. Because once the emotions pass through the filter of the mind, it gets reduced. And that's what we're saying like this. That in Tayu, the Oirais, the energy is intense and powerful. In Tikkun, precisely because it goes through the scrutiny of the mind, and that only allows the emotion out of its cage, if you can say, only in a limited form, that creates a far more weaker and low energy emotion. That's why children have more form of passion in whatever they're doing, because they're closer. Children are closer. Children are closer to their inherent intrinsic natural emotions, and the human being and an adult is far calmer in his emotions. There isn't that passion, that intensity in his life. Precisely why the adult, because the adult's emotions have been curbed by the intellect. So it's lacking that intensity, it's lacking that urgency, that power that the seichel has. Based on all of this, let's read inside. So now let's go back and see if it makes sense what we learned. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav aleisav achiv. Hine yedua, it is known, Yaakov Shorshoi, whom Ibchina Shema, the Oilam Atikun. The root of Yaakov is from the name of Ma. See, that's what we mentioned before, of the world of Tikkun. What is the energy in the world of Tikkun? The energy of the world of Tikkun is the selflessness that is characterized by Ma, by the self-effacement and the self-suspension of the Ma. The Shorshoi Shel Esav, but the root of Esav, whom Ibchinas Oilam Atayu. The root of Esav is from the world of Tayu. The Oides the Tayu and the energy of Tayu hem gedoyle miyoid. The energy of Tayu is very, very great. V'loy yachlu leslabish b'toycha kelim. As mentioned above, Tayu chayus, the energy, the light and the energy in Tayu was so powerful and intense that it couldn't condense itself and control itself and be assimilated into the vessels. And therefore what happened, v'nistalku maha kelim. It has retracted from the vessel. The hemchenas makifim, as we said earlier, the chayus of Tayu, the energy of Chayu, retracted into itself. Va'kelim nishbedu, and the vessels broke. The naflu lamata, and they fell down below. L'chein, as we mentioned earlier, ha'ya Esav shalamata rush. Esav down here was a rush, because Esav was here already as Esav, the energy that is contained in Esav is from those fallen sparks from the world of Tayu. And that's why Esav was a monster. Esav was, because Esav lost all focus of intellect, of reasoning. He acted based on self-centeredness of his emotions, of his being, and that is those fallen shards of Tayu. Avo mitzad shayri shayri b'makifim de Tayu, but from his inner root of roots in the makifim de Tayu, haday oides de Tayu ham lamaylam oides de tikkun. So the energies of Tayu are reigned superior, far higher than the oides de tikkun. As we mentioned before, that when you have the energy of Tayu, the energy of pure emotions as they emanate from the soul, when they're not yet filtered through the filter of the mind, these emotions are far more intense and far more powerful. Yaakov thought that Esav has already been rehabilitated. Because the thing is like this, as we mentioned before, the Jew enters into the world. The Jew is an extension of that, is a manifestation of the energy of Tikkun. The Jew is able to have the power, the bittul, which is the power of bittul, koyach ma. The neshama is the main power of the neshama is its self nullification, its bittul to Hashem, and the Jew is able to bring the whole entire existence to that nullification. Our job is to reveal and bring to all creatures that are obsessed with ego, with obsessed with their self, that they too should submit to Hashem's desire, should see themselves as anin evreisi l'shamash eskaini. I am here to serve my Creator, not to serve myself. In other words, to extend that bittul, to extend that bittul of Tayu into the world of, to extend that bittul of Tikkun into the world of Tayu. So Yaakov thought that Esav has been already rehabilitated, that Esav has elevated himself. And therefore, that he returned to his lofty source in the makifim of Tayu, shalifnei atikun, that is before tikun. And therefore, shalach Yaakov malachim lefanov. The pasuk emphasizes why yishlach Yaakov, that when Yaakov is sending, he's sending the malachim lefanov, before him. So simply means, says by yishlach Yaakov malachim leesav. What is it? Lefanov, before him. Lefanov before him means to a level that is higher than him, because as we've mentioned before, the oyer as it's entering into the world of Tikkun is already far more contracted and limited. Just like in the human experience, the energy, once it's already filtered by the mind, gets contracted and limited. The mind reduces it, as opposed to the natural, instinctive, soul potent energies that emanating directly from the soul as the emotions come in their raw state. And therefore, Yaakov sent up Lefana before him, Lefana Mach. Dahainu el bechina shalemayla memenu b'madrega. Yaakov was trying to send to Esav, because Yaakov was trying to reach a level that is beyond it. El Esav achiv seira, to Esav his brothers to seir. Shehu bechinas malchin kadmoyin de Tayu, which are these primordial kings of the world of Tayu. Bechinas makifim kenis kliel. These are these makifim that is mentioned above. What Yaakov's objective was that he wanted to draw down that energy of Tayu down here below. Betikun, in his world of rectification, Shehu b'chinat ha'or pnimi, which is the inner light, v'yoyer ha'makif the pnimi, and the makif energy should be introduced into the pnimi, v'yisyachtu yachad, and they should unite together. What is he saying over here? As mentioned, as we were talking about before, that this energy of Tayu, this a person who is predominated by one's mind, the person that follows his mind, usually what happens to these people is they become boring, lifeless, and that's what we find a lot of times, that precisely a person who's extremely observant, rigorous in his religiosity, becomes extremely dull. Because why does Yiddishkeit create place on a person? It creates all kinds of borders, restrictions. It doesn't allow the uninhibited emotions to just express themselves in their full thing. It directs man in a very... It breaks man's life. Just like, for example, you have a wind blowing. So where you go to the beach, the wind is extremely powerful. You go in a city, the wind is reduced. Why is the wind more powerful in the beach at the ocean? Because over there, there is no walls, there's no barriers, there's nothing to break it. So it can gain momentum. The wind gets stronger and stronger because there's nothing to block it. When a person wants to run and you want to really run quickly, so if there's nothing obscuring you, you can. But if you have to run in between and there's all kinds of stuff blocking you, so that reduces the energy. So the mind, the scrutiny and the discrimination and the direction and the yes and the no, the laws and the restrictions of the mind reduce that energy. That's why people that seem to be living without any discipline, there is intense energy. So here's the thing. Is it meant to be that way? Are we supposed to be, just because one becomes observant and one becomes extremely focused in what is correct and what is not, and allows their mind to dictate their life, does that mean that we have to lose that energy of tikkun? So we say, no, the purpose of creation is the opposite. Once you create broad vessels of tikkun, now you have to go back and access that intense energy of tayu, which means that in those things that the mind says you ought to love, those things that the mind says this is correct and this is good, you have to love it not because your mind tells you, in other words, and therefore it's a love that, in other words, you love another Jew, you can love another Jew two ways. You can love another Jew because that's what it says in Chassidus and so forth, it says that you have to love and so forth, so there is a certain, or you can love another Jew because you experience your native intrinsic passion and love towards another yid. That inner innate powerful love. That means bringing back the raw energy of Tayu into the experience of Tikkun. That it doesn't remain, it's not, despite the fact that generally it seems to be an impossible thing. Because the mere fact that you're creating all these borders and boundaries must be what? Diminishing the energy. So what Yaakov was doing was like this. Yaakov was sending to Esav, because Yaakov was saying, Esav is the man who has access to those potent energies of Tayu, because that's where he comes from. Yaakov doesn't have access to that light, because Yaakov is from the world of Tikkun. Therefore, Yaakov must ask Esav. He sent to Esav and he said, please Esav, I have constructed already a healthy lifestyle. I've created a world of tikkun. I have formulated a way of life that is correct and right by the objective truths of reality, as opposed to by myself. But once that is there, now I need you to fill my organized, limited life with the raw energy of time. And that's an incredible challenge. Most of us are it's either or. Either a person is living without the restrictions, and then there is a wildness. Usually they get into big trouble, but there is that wildness. Or there is this restrictiveness, but then there is it's dull. So Yaakov sends to Esau, because Yaakov wants to bring in the infinite light of Tayu back to be drawn down into the vessels of Tikkun. And that's why he said to them, we asked in the beginning of the Maamar, why was Yaakov telling Esav about all his wealth and everything that he had accomplished? So that's why he said, this is what you need to tell my master Esav. Im Lavan garti, that I have lived with Lavan. I possess already Shoyer, and I possess Chamoyer, and I have this, and I have that. Why is Yaakov seemingly tickling Esav and telling him that he has all these things? Because what Yaakov was saying is like this. Being that I have constructed already the broad vessels of Tikkun, now that I have already, I've matured, and like a child matured, and I say I know I formulated a healthy life plan where I can act in a correct, moral, and ethical, and justified manner. I've already structured a world of Tikkun. Now, once I've done that, now you can bring in the energy of Tayyip. Because before that, if you don't have vessels, if you don't have containers, then the light doesn't have where to, the light doesn't have where to register. More than that, those energies of Tayyip already tried. It experienced already a shvira. It experienced already a breakage. Why did it experience a shvira? Because there weren't any vessels. The vessels weren't broad enough. But now Yaakov said, I have constructed new vessels, and that is the idea of I have a shoyer, chamoyer, soin, I have a donkey, and I have an ox, I have an eved, a servant, I have a shifcha, I have a maid, which represents mystically all the kalim of tikkun. So Yaakov says, I have constructed this. Now bring on the light. Now the energy can be brought in. As he says, kol seder atikkun datzilus betachlis hashleimus. Because all the levels and the levels of the world of Atzilus, which is the tzayin, chamoyer, the shoyer is the ox, v'chamoyer and the donkey, tzayin the sheep, the eved and the servant, the shivcha and the maid, kulam nizbareru v'nistaknu al yidei shem ma. They have already been rectified through the name of ma. It was to me, meaning I've already fixed them. And the reason I was able to accomplish this was because I lived with Lavan, which means the supernal whiteness. The main power of Yaakov, Baal Olam Atzilus, the owner or the one that owns or is the force in the world of Atzilus. That comes from Lavan. He's saying now a very interesting thing. Let's go back one simple question. How does the mind really have that power to take such potent energies like love and fear, which as we said earlier, or love and discipline, chesed and gevura, which come from a place much deeper than the mind, which are embedded in the inner essential character of the soul, and therefore they're so intense and so powerful. How does the mind have the ability to superimpose control over them, to blend two opposites? What is the power of the mind? Where does it get that? If these two things are diametrically opposed, they're really two opposites. Fire and water can't go together. How does the mind bring them together? So the answer is, because really, in the source of sources, the kindness and the gevura, the chesed and gevura of man, even though they're opposites, they're only opposites in a manifest state. But they're in the original source, in their quintessential essence of man, chesed and gevura stem from the same place, and that is in the pure simplicity, the simple energy of the soul. Because a soul, we can't say, is a composite for many different things. For example, let's give an example for this. You have a painting, and the painting has various different colors. You have blue and red and black and green and all the various different colors. Then there is the white canvas that contains the whole painting. So that white canvas that precedes all the colors, in a sense, it contains within it the potential for all the various colors to be imprinted on it. But it itself is still colorless. It itself is still simple and pure. So where does all expressions, manifestations of the soul come from? In their original quintessential source. A person is not made up from a few different pieces. There is one simple soul that has the ability to express itself either in kindness or, but in this stage, it's not tainted yet with any specific color. That's the idea of whiteness. The same is also in God. God is not a dual existence of chesed and gevura. The energy of Tayyu stems from a place, from the simple truth of God that transcends any emanation. And over there, Chesed and Gevurah are really one. Because the same potential that God has to extend himself in kindness is the same potential that he has for discipline. So in their quintessential essence, they're merged as one entity. That is the idea of Lavan. Yaakov's father-in-law was called Lavan. Why is he Lavan? So even though Lavan down here was a swindler, he was a liar, he was the chief deceiver in the planet, the biggest. But in his spiritual source, Lavan means whiteness, because Lavan stems from a place where of this that transcends Tayu and Tikkun, higher than Tayu and higher than Tikkun. It represents the level called Atzmus Ayin Soif, the essence of God's life, where there is no completely colorless. And that is why the mind has the ability, or before, has the ability to gain control over the Chesed and harmonize it with the Gevura, is because in truth of truth, Chesed and Gevura really emanate as a thing. Once they depart, once they come out from the source, then they're two opposing enemies that can't get together. But the mind has that ability because the mind is enrooted in that simple life in Elyon, in that simple place where it can evoke something deeper than the essential character of the emotions, and therefore bring synchrony or symmetry and harmony amongst the emotions. And that's the idea why Yaakov said like this: how was I able to create Shor v'chamor Eved v'shivcha, which represent the world of Atzilus, which is a world of blending, a world of harmony? That is only because in love on Garti, because I live and I'm connected to that supernal level called Lavan, which, by the way, last year we learned an amazing thing in one of the memoirs, that this, how can Lavan down here, the biggest shagets in the world, have a source in that Lavan? So you see something, Klipa mirror and reflects its source in Kedusha, but in a completely perverted way. What do we find by Lavan? Lavan couldn't keep his word, his promise. Lavan kept on changing. If he told him, I'm going to give you the speckled sheep, then he said stripes. Then he said, no, I'm going to give you the stripes. He kept on switching. From one to the other. That interchangeability that Lavan was able to change from one to the other, in its supernal sources, because there is a place within God where he's still beyond anything. So all colors and all manifestations are really interchangeable one with each other, because they originate in one simple... But there it's justified. In our world, once things take on certain forms, I can come and say, what's yours is mine, what mine is yours. Here, there is already definitions and borders and boundaries, and everybody's got to respect the property and the laws and regulations and the forms of things. But the reason why love on down here was unfaithful and such a liar was because of his source in the world of Tikkun, where there it's also formless. And therefore forms don't matter, because he's beyond all form. He's beyond all color. And therefore all of him, you're right. But that's just a separate idea. So this is what we're learning over here. Yaakov says, in love on Garti, I've accessed my source, which is love on. I've gone and I lived with love on. And over there I was able to construct the vessels of Tikkun. But Shor v'chamor, the problem is that I'm lifeless. The problem is I'm left with this cold effect of a mind that needs to control everything. I'm lacking passion. I'm lacking vitality. Because of what? Because the realm of Tikkun is missing this unique raw energy. So therefore I am calling you, Esav, to please come and you make your contribution. Your contribution is to imbue your light, but you're going to channel it through me, so that energy is going to come in a constructive manner. It's sort of like one time we spoke in a shir, the difference between an elderly person and a teenager. Teenagers are what? Have raw energy. Elderly people, but the problem with teenagers is they have no direction. So they have all their energy and all their things, and they're going to go hang out in the hookah cafe and spend it, because that's where it's happening. So they can have all this intense thing and do crazy things. Now if we can imagine an elderly person, a person who's matured already in his mind, knows what's good and what's correct and can lead a perfect life. The problem is he's dry already. There's no chayas there, because the energy isn't there anymore. So the ultimate partnership, the most beautiful partnership, is when a young man submits himself to the vision and the clarity and the guidance of an elderly sage. That's the idea of chassid, and the chassid and the Rebbe is where Rebbe needs chassidim. He needs chassidim because chassidim go out there and they're the soldiers and the foot and people who go out and do the job. But they need that vision, they need that guidance of the super mind of that has that vision and be able to direct them and guide them. Here you have the combination of both, where you have the unbridled power of tayu, of raw energy finding expression in constructive patterns and constructive behavior. So this is what Yaakov says. So again, because I lived with love. Pidish pchinas loiv in the elyon, I come from that supernal whiteness. Shemisham ha'yikr koyach hashefel Yaakov. That's where the main power was to Yaakov. Baloi lamatzilus. Levader to lesakin hakl. Yaakov was able to correct it all because he's connected to that world of the kivun shekain and sinso. Shenigmar v'nimshach maleches atikun. Since I finished doing my job, b'shlemus ma'ata now ro v'yachal is hashroz v'amshachas hamakifim detoy. Now there can be the dwelling and the flow of those encompassing energies of Tayyum. She'im lo'yhoyen nigvar ha'tikun b'shlemus. If that the were realms of Tikkun would have not have been completed, lo'yhoyen yachal li'yisam shachas ha'makifim, then you couldn't have the drawing down of the makif. K'moshe kasev b'zoyar, because the Zoyar says, the leiz b'rchas ha'shar yebasar ekna, that the blessing cannot reside in an empty place. There has to be a vessel. Ela basar shlim, only in a perfected place. Av achshav she'nigmar ha'tikun b'tachlis, now that I have finished my job, harei ze asar shlim, this is already a complete place. Shero liyus boy hamshachas hamakifim el yoinim, that it is fitting that now there can be the dwelling of these makif. Lachain, therefore, ve'eshlecha lahagid la'adoni, I am sending to tell my master. Why is Yaakov speaking to Esav like his master? Because Esav in his source is really the master. He's in a higher place. Limtzoichain beinecha, I want to find favor in your eyes, because I want you to shower down from your source to me. You should send down your energy into me. But in the world of Tikkun. And this means to find favor. That's why Yaakov had to say this to Esau. Because this is what was necessary. This was a prerequisite for him to receive that light. The transformation of darkness to light has been transformed already in the world of Tikkun. There is already rectified vessels. This is a perfect place, mamish. I am. What's it called again? Fitting to find favor in your eyes. Shehi ashra sabracha debchinas hamakifim. Now the makif energy can enter in. So vayeshuvu hamalachim al Yaakov. Now the malachim are coming back to Yaakov. Leimer, and they say, banu elachicha leisav. We came to your brother Esav. Vagam ha'elach lekrascha, and he's also coming against you. Va'arba meis yishimai. He's coming with an entourage of 400 men. What is there saying? Pidish shuvas hamalachim ukach. The malachim are answering Yaakov as follows. She'im ha'yoyishem achmasach ro'i v'nachin ma'oy. It is true that on your part it is fitting and it is correct she'im shechalechem b'chinas ha'makiv, that you are ready to take on this new energy, the makiv energy, the tayu of tayu. Ma'achar she'nimtzach b'cha shleimu shel ha'tikun, because you have already perfected yourself to the state, to ultimate perfection of tikun. V'ma'a la'sois. But what should I do? Now, by the way, this aspect that Yaakov had to construct the world of Tikkun is associated with what we learned last week, that Yaakov picked up the stones and he created and he brought them all back up to the Yud. We spoke last week, and then he brought down the Vav. He constructed the expression of Torah and Mitzvahs, which Torah and Mitzvahs is really the way, put it this way. We mentioned earlier that the negativity of Tayu is that every existence exists at totally self-absorbed in itself, as a center of existence. I am everything, and everything is for me, and I'm here to serve myself. The idea of Tikkun is to put everything, to open everything up with the Kayacha Chachma, to be able to see the whole picture, to see there's a bigger creation, there's a purpose to life, to reconstruct. And what does that? What addresses every creation and turns it inside out, instead of it being absorbed in itself, directs it to serve a higher purpose? That's Torah and Mitzvahs. Those are the vessels. Those are the broad vessels of Tikkun, which take every creation and reinvent it, sort of, to be a servant instead of looking to be served. That's the making of, and that's what we said last week. Yaakov picked up the stones out of their disorganized manner. He made it all to one stone, meaning it brought them all to the reality there was only one God that created us all. And then he made it into a pillar. Yaakov was in that mode of creating a world of tikkun. Created a world where every creature, as we mentioned earlier, sees itself as part of a greater symphony, but I have to add my particular note with my unique instrument that God has given me to play an instrumental and pivotal role in the ultimate, vast, eternal plan and the grand plan of creation. So Yaakov has done that. So Yaakov is sending to Esav. But now the Malachim are coming back and saying that what? Esav is coming. It's true. You're ready. Because you're complete. But what can we do? There is something that's blocking. There's something that's withholding that can't work. Because Esav isn't ready. Esav has not rehabilitated. Because he is still down here low. He is still in a shattered state. He has not been rectified at all. He has not been refined. Meaning, Esav is only able to draw down his source of Tayu. His Esav reconnects his raw energy to the energy of Tayu, which is divine energy. Which is that love. For example, if sometimes you can see a chassid, a Jew, who is instinctively Jewish, meaning his Jewishness is not a philosophy. His chassidishkeit, his is not cold in mind. It's full of soul, full of. So you have, in a sense, toyu emotions, because it's not coming from this is correct or right. These are natural, but it's in a holy place. It's connected to its source. These are divine, holy emotions. Esav was in a shviradig state. He was in a broken state. He was still completely lost in his, and therefore he had no way to get back to those makifim to tell you because he was disconnected from the source. So that's what they're saying. He's still in a broken state. How can he bestow upon you from his makif, from his transcendental or encompassing shayrish to tell you now? He is still down here below. And the proof of this is Shahid Bashvira, that he's in a broken state. I was just playing with this idea this week. What does it mean? He asked Esav to come. He wanted to send to Esav, but then he realized that Esav isn't ready. Esav is still in a unrectified state, and therefore Esav can't do it for him. I'm just thinking how it is in our personal lives, and this is just a undeveloped idea, but maybe you can help me. The thought that came up was sort of that you have a person. You know, this idea that we have, there's the human and there's the animal, and the animal is Tayudig and the human is also within the human, within every human being, because we have an animal nature, we have a nefesh of Bahamas, we have an animalistic nature, and the emotions of the animal soul are not influenced by the mind. It's where the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that primarily the animal soul works its center, its epic of its being, its emotions, self-centeredness. It wants everything that's just going to perpetuate its own existence. And then we have a nefesh of the kiss. The nefesh of the kiss is that purposeful being within us, that soul, the consciousness that we have, that is, or the conscience that we have, that there is a purpose and there is a meaning to life and so forth. And there is that direction, and man's life is dictated by what is correct and what ought to be, not by what I feel. So these are the two opposing forces within man, nefesh of Bahamas, nefesh of the kiss. So, Yaakov Avinu, a person who builds up a world of tikkun, means a person who is not willing to give in to the animalistic cravings, to live a life just based on his animalistic impulses, begins to develop a holy ideology, philosophy, and structure in his life. Meaning one who develops his godly soul. How do you develop a godly soul? It takes education, to go to school, where you can educate yourself, and studying and learning. You create a certain a paradigm of holiness. You create godly thoughts, godly, holy ideas in your mind, holy inspiration, and then you structure within yourself, you create to match them, you bring forth within them an appetite for holiness, a feeling towards Kedusha, right? Desires to, and you, so a person who has done that sort of has created has built Kalim of Tikkun, right? But in order to really fully, in a sense, you have to shut down your animal soul. You have to, and that's the fight in life. You have to take your ego and crush it, the Alter Rebbe in Tanya keeps on speaking about silencing your Nefesh HaBahamas. Nefesh HaBahamas wants to have its way, and you have to keep on slamming it down. Saying, no, I won't do what my animal soul wants, too. I'm going to do what my Nefesh HaLikis wants. Okay, fine. So but this person, their Nefesh HaLikis, holds supreme. But then there's a problem. Because since we're only dealing with the Neshama, and the Neshama is always interested in what is correct, so it doesn't really have an ego. So if it doesn't really have an ego, the Neshama itself is lacking passion. It's lacking the intensity. Passion comes from your ego, comes from your animal soul. So we say to this person, you're great. You've really structured, you've sort of mastered your life, you have the supremacy of Mayach Shalat al Alev, your mind rules over the heart, your life is being dictated by the vision and the truths of your mind. But now what do you have to do? Now you have to go and pick up your ego again. Why? Because you have to get that intensity of not just doing things because they're correct, but you have to feel that I want with all my soul and being, I want that good, I want to do kindness. Shouldn't it be kindness because it's correct? When you're doing kindness because it's correct, as we said before, it's limited, it's all tempered, it's weak. But when you're doing it with your full energy, with your full soul, so you have to get back to the ego. So now you say, bring on the ego. But bring on the ego and want to filter it through your Nefesh HaLikis. But what happens if you go to the cage for the first time after 20 years of suppressing your ego and keeping it locked up, and you're not allowing it to come out? And like in the life of the Beinoni, the Alter Rebbe says the ego doesn't really change. The Beinoni, it just keeps it bottled up. And you go, and for the first time, you remove the cap. And you want to allow that sense of I to re-enter into your life. And you think that, okay, being that you've now already, your Nefesh HaLikis is so sophisticated and so perfect, and your Nefesh HaBahamas is now going to cooperate. But you might open up the ego and discover that it's just as ugly as it was 20 years ago. It's just as nasty as it was, it hasn't been rectified. So the Nefesh HaBahamas has never been changed. Your Nefesh HaLikis is good, you have a holy, but there's still a part of you that is still as broken as it was, as misguided, as self-centered as it was. And that can be extremely dangerous. So what you got to do is put the bottle up? No. You have to start changing that ego a little bit. You have to get back. So that's the point of what we call usually that you have to have the Chassidus always speaks about. You have to work with your Nefesh HaBahamas. It's not enough just to locking it and shutting it down and ignoring it, suppressing it. You have to meditate on things that even your animal can understand, and slowly but surely change and rehabilitate the animal soul within man. Then you gain two things. First of all, you're complete as a human being because you have both your souls. Secondly, you have the intensity of ego, but ego that is guided in the right way. You have, and everything good that you do, it's not just with cold calculations, but it is with warm passion, biased passion, but biased in a holy way. You love what's right and what's correct with all of your being, with all of your soul. And that's sort of, it seems, where this plays out in a person's life. You can take a look at your Esav and find that Esav isn't rectified, and then according to what the Alter Rebbe said, Yaakov gave up. Yaakov figured that Esav is not ready. It's going to take a few thousand years of Jews living amongst the Gentiles to change Esav and turn him into a mensch. It would take a long time for that to happen, till the days of Mashiach. But then he wasn't ready. But Yaakov still didn't give up on the Eretz to tell you. Meaning, just because your animal soul isn't ready yet, and you can't go that route, we're going to learn over here, Yaakov figures that he still has to get the energy of Tayu, but he has to go a different route. He can't ask Esav to give it to him, because Esav doesn't have access to it, because Esav is still broken. So the only way to get it, we'll see. Let's learn it. But first, the Alter Rebbe is going to explain, what is the proof that Esav isn't rectified? Where do you see that Esav is there? She says, what is Esav coming? How is Esav marching to Yaakov? He's coming with 400 men. What is these 400 men? Pidish, Dalad, Meis Ish, Hemdinim, Kashim, Shalachitzoinim. These 400 men are extreme judgments of the extraneous forces. There is a concept in Kabbalah of harsh dinim, harsh gevuros, and that's sources of all the powers of klipa that are, and particularly hanim shachim that are drawn min tav bate dinim kashim the mishtakim, from the 400 harsh courthouses that exist in some realm, whatever they are. Now, don't ask me what this is all about, because I don't know. But there is some force of what we call dinim kashim, of intense din judgments, as it is been. Now, and these are the 400 men that were manifest with it. In other words, these are lowly beings that are in an unrectified manner. We can know that it is known. Where do these, the number 400, when you begin to learn anything within the esoteric part of Torah, when you see a number, you right away have to ask yourself, what's this number? So the number 400, you look back in the Torah, you say, did we ever find any other significance to 400? Well, just a few weeks ago, we encountered 400 again. And that was, Avraham Avinu paid for Hebron, for the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, he paid 400 coins, gold coins. So those 400 gold coins that Avram gave to Ephron, which means Avram is the realm of holiness, Ephron is the realm of Klippa, the realm of the other side. So Avram was transmitting certain extremely high potent energy, deposits of energy. He was investing it and giving it to Ephron. We're going to see why soon. Those 400, which are now, when Avram gave it, was extremely lofty and high, but these things, once it's given over to Ephron, Ephron misuses them, and they end up being the 400 powers of harsh courthouses that end up being that result to manifest themselves in the 400 men of Esau. Maybe we'll get some clarity as we learn. Shesharshim Shadalad Meis Ishanel, Nesavim and Dalad Meis Shekel Kesef Shanasin Avram Avinu LeEphron, that Avram gave to Ephron. Shahadalad Meis Shekel Hanel. What are they in the original source? They're called 400 shekel kesef. Kesef means silver. But kesef also in the Hebrew word means longing. Longing. Nichsoif nichsafti. The long. Which means there are 400 worlds of longing, which represents the highest, most sublime levels. When Mashiach is going to come, the ultimate tikkun in the end of days, Hashem is going to give to the tzaddikim, they're going to inherit 400 almond chsifin, 400 world of ultimate godly, where they expire completely in God's light, because the bliss and the ecstasy is just immeasurable, uncontainable. So they will totally become melt in that light. And that is called the almond chsifin. The Yarsa Tzadikai Eliyahu. Now, can you imagine if those 400 worlds of longing, whatever, are given over into the hands of Chitzayinim? So, what does that become? A bunch of other nasty cravings and longings that can be experienced in a very unholy manner. The Hainu, Shehem, Bchinas. And really, what are they? These longings? The longing comes really, it's not really. Ksufim doesn't really mean longing. Ksufim means when a person is experiencing or maybe it does mean longing, but when a person is longing for an experience of incredible pleasure and sensation that once one has experienced and delight that one wants to go back to. That's the kisafim. So this represents Shehem Pchinas Oyres Shefa Oynege Elyon. This is the light and a flow of the supernal delight, God's inherent, infinite delight of delights. Hanem shachem mepchinas atiko kadisha, that stem from what is called the ancient one. the ancient holy one, which is the high, the innermost of the Keser of the crown. Shehu b'chinas memutze bein atzmus ein soif lo'olam atzilus. Keser we know is the intermediary, the transmitter between God Himself and the world of atzilus. In every transmission between one realm to a complete different realm, there has to be a middleman. And the middle, the intermediary, like a translator, which translates people who speak two different languages. God, who is infinite, and the worlds that are finite, need an intermediary. The intermediary is Keser. Now, Keser, so being that Keser is so close to that, the original quintessential level of God's essential self, so therefore Keser is filled with that delight. As it is known that Keser is that intermediary. And that's where that great bliss and the light is going to come to the tzaddikim la'asad love. And these are the 400 worlds of longing. Those are the 400 shekel kesef. The nikra. What does it say that Avram did? Avram took those 400 worlds, and it says that they were oivar la'soicher. Simply, it meant they go over to every merchant. Meaning they. These were good coins. They were not. They were coins that are usable. Everybody will accept them, because in those days, the value of a coin depended on its clarity. It's that it wasn't rubbed out or whatever. So this was oivel asoich, or the high, the best of it. What does it mean? What in the deeper meaning over here? Ki keser nikra soicher, because keser is called a merchant. Why? Lashon Tzchor Tzchor. Tzchor, because Keser, generally we say, Keser is a light that's bigger than the world. It's higher, meaning it's Makif. Makif means encompassing, surrounding. Tzchor means around. And that's why a merchant is called a Tzchor. Why? Because a merchant is always, what is a merchant? He goes, he's going from here to there, he's busy. He's going all over the place. He doesn't stay in one place. A merchant, he moves from place to place. So Keser is called Tzorcher because Keser is such an infinite light that is encompassing, bigger, surrounding all the worlds. Oiver la Tzorcher means that it passes the Tzorcher. Meaning that these Dalet Meir Shekel don't really stem from Keser. They stem from Ein Sof itself that transcends even Keser. Oiver, it passes. These 400 coins come from a place even higher than Keser. Oiver, they supersede and transcend Tzorcher the Tzorcher. They stem even higher than Keser. And they're drawn into Keser. And from there they will illuminate to the tzaddikim. Now the question is, why is Avram Avinu giving these 400 coins for Ephraim? The inyan anasina le'Ephraim, and the giving to Ephraim, ha'ya bederech inyan yeridus ha'berurim. This was what the idea of descending, the same idea that a soul descends into a physical body. So it seems like compromising on this beautiful soul, and this holy soul, diminishing its light. But in truth, it's not really a diminishing, because just like every time, it's called an investment. The neshama coming down to this world is called a business investment. Just like when a person does any business investment, you're taking your hard-earned money, and what are you doing with it? You're investing it in someone else's business, so you're putting it into something else. You're parting with your money. But why are you doing it? Because you're hoping for a return, you're hoping for a gain. So too, Avram Avinu took these incredible energies of the world of Oivel HaSoicha, these 400 worlds, and he implanted it in Klipa, because he knew that it's going in there so that later it can come back, and when it will come back with a profit, the dividend far more than the principal that has been put in. Kedei lo itziam achakach mimenu b'toisvus bracha. In order to take him back later with ach beini lebeini, but meanwhile, until we're able to get them back, hen sheyardu kolkach lamata mata, they've descended very, very low, v'nasa b'chinas dalet meyos ish le'esav. They became the 400 men that Esav was hanging out with. V'hu b'chinas sak. And that is the idea of sack. Sack, it says that God, a klip is associated with a sack. It says, God says, I will dress the heavens with a sack. The heavens are also representing the energy of Kesa, the Makif. Because what is the idea of the sky? It's Makif. It surrounds the whole the whole world up, right? So the Shemayim is like, so that's like the Kesed. And Hashem says we take that and we, there's a pasuk that says, Al b'shamayim kadrois, I will dress the Shemayim, the heavens, kadrois, I don't know what kadrois means, with dirty clothing, v'sak asim k'susam, and a sack, I will make up. Which means it's the idea of taking Shemayim, taking the energy of Keser, and putting it into a sack, into Klipa. Now, sack is 400. Because sack is Shin Kuf. Shin Kuf is the gematria of 400. So it's the far 400 men of Esav that contain the heavenly energy of the 400 worlds of longing that Avram has given them. As it, V'yubchen ha-sack, k'ma shekosev al b'shamayim kadris v'sack osim k'susam. Chayin amad azal, the same sages that tell us, ha-toyrach ha-ger ha-sack, that the Torah guards itself in a sack. The hainu, sh'nesavu b'chines levush sack, is brought about a garment of a sack, sh'achitzoynim yankim imenu, that the extraneous forces derive their energy from. Well, la'asad lavay, when Mashiach comes, b'gemar kol ha-birudim, at the end, when we will complete our job in rectifying the world, when death will be removed forever, and the ruach and the spirit of impurity shall remove us. So Ephraim is going to give back, he's going to restore the 400 silver coins. He's going to give it back to the root to Kedusha, plus the dividend that are going to come along with it. But now, as long as Esav was coming with these 400 men, and now they're not in a holy state, Yaakov knew, the Esav doesn't have the ability to give him back, that Esav doesn't have the ability to act, to be mashpia, to draw down the makav of Toyu, asher hu mevakish, that he's requesting, because he himself is down here, the ain Esav, and there's no other choice. Elarak sheyamshich Yaakov ba'atzmai as ha-makiv hanal. That Yaakov himself needs to get to that mark. But without the assistance of Esav. So how does he do that? Olazois, kishayod ha-she ba'atzmai tzarech la-hamshich ha-makiv hanal. When Yaakov knew that he has to get the makiv himself, lachein hutzrach la'alois man kenegdoi. So now he needed to send up feminine waters to that level of makiv to draw that makiv down. Because the rule is that whenever you want to contact any spiritual level and you want to derive energy from it, you first have to give it something. That's the way it is. Everything works in give and take. Mashpia makava, you have to give. Just like the woman first has to transmit to the man in order for the man to be mashpia to the woman. That's the idea of maya nukvin and maya nukvin. Sarusa dolatata, the arousal from below that evokes the rest. But here Yaakov had to figure out a way to reach, not, see, generally, most of the stimuli from below, which we generally know, all the Torah mitzvahs that we do, they rise upwards to the heaven, and they bring down the greater blessing from above, just like rain. First, the water, the mist rises from the earth, and then it comes down and showers down rain, and it brings the abundance of blessings to the world. But usually when we transmit or send up the energy upward, the Sarusa Dolatata, the Maya Nukvan, the feminine waters upwards, it's all to the world of Tikkun. Because everything that comes to us is from all the give and take in the present order of existence is only from the world of Tikkun. And we know how do you bring up Maya Nukvan is through Torah and Mitzvahs. But Yaakov knew he has to get to a place far beyond. He has to get to the energy of Tayyum. And that requires a whole different plan. And that's why then, right after this, that Yaakov finds out, Yaakov starts doing these strange things. The first thing he does, he divides his family into two groups. He makes two camps. Why is he making two camps? And then he's busy sending this huge gift. And the Torah enumerates exactly what he sent, so many camels, and so many donkeys, and so many this, and so many that. Because this is all Yaakov's sending up. This is all Yaakov reaching out to those energies, to those potent powers of Tayu, in order to draw them down. And they will be triggered, particularly through this minchas we're going to read. Kedei laham shechadeh makif, ki ruach eser ruach, because the spirit draws down a spirit. When you send up, it will bring that. V'zeh inyan ha-mincha, and this is the gift, Sheshalach Yaakov le'Esav, that Yaakov is sending to Esav. See, even though he's sending it to Esav, he was giving it to Esav down here, he wasn't really sending it to Esav down here, he was sending it to Esav's source. That's who he was sending it to those realms of Tayyub. Hu b'chinat ha'loz man, lahamshich, to draw down mad the makif to Tayyub. Mayin duchrin, the masculine waters of makif of Tayyub anal, which is going to be stowed to him now. Elakach, and therefore, shalach gimalim. That's why he was busy with camels. Avshahem behemois temeyos. Even though generally, this is non-kosher. And we can't, when we want to bring anything up to God, we know that we can't elevate anything that isn't kosher. Here Yaakov is sending up camels. Camels aren't kosher. Every mitzvah that we do can only be done with kosher material. Even, let's say, for example, not only what we're eating. If we're, for example, riding a Sefer Torah, we can only use the hide of a kosher animal. Because we can only elevate klipas noga, those elements, those things that are elevatable. But those substances that come from Shalosh Klipas HaTemeyos, from the completely opaque realms that we can't elevate, the non-kosher we can't elevate. So now the question is, that how did Yaakov... In a sense, a mincha means like a sacrifice. He was bringing a korban. In a korban, you also in the Beis HaMikdash, you can only bring, in the temple, you're only able to bring kosher animals, not now kosher animals. Afshem behemoth tameis, even though now, ki lagab oir makiv hanal, because to that oir makiv, kechashecha ka'ira, darkness and light is equal. Because what is that whole, what is the discriminating factor that differentiates and says, this is kosher, and this can be elevated, and this is non-kosher? That is only, see, those emotions in the world of tikkun, the chesed of tikkun, the chesed of tikkun is, for example, when we say something is kosher and we can elevate it, what does that mean? That means that God is embracing that object. God is taking it in. God is extending and connecting to that thing. So that's an energy of chesed. So why is there only, if it's God's love and God is infinitely loving, so then why can't we give him everything? Why can't we take a piece of ham and elevate it to God? The answer is because the truth is God's love is infinite, but being that it's tempered by what? By the moichin of tikkun. So it says this yeah and that not. So it comes and makes a difference. And that's where the whole realm of Torah and mitzvahs come in, to discriminate and to scrutinize and to give what yeah and what no. But once you're reaching the levels over there, we have pure love. And the love opens up to everything. God says, yeah, anything. Over there you can elevate the most evil, the most lowliest things can experience a divine embrace. Not because it is worth it, but because God has no limit in what he can embrace. If you're going to say that God cannot kiss the lowliest, he can't love the lowliest of beings, that means you're putting a limit to his capacity to love. Over here, it's literally infinite. So it has no limit. So you can have the most despicable being, and that too can be elevated. That too can be included in holiness, or whatever. Exactly what that means, I don't know. But from God's perspective, it can go so low, there's no limit to how low it can go. So because Yaakov wanted to evoke this level, he dafka took a mincha from non-kosher animals, because that idea, because Tayu is beyond the discrimination of light and darkness, of good and bad. And he says, Yaakov says, Elakei Avi Avram. Yaakov now starts praying. The next thing he does. And he said, the God of my father Abraham, Elokei Avi Yitzchak, the God of my father Yitzchak. Let's read the verse. It's amazing how the Alter Rebbe, by the way, the Rebbe says this is one of the only memoirs where the Alter Rebbe explains, he goes in the order of the parasha, and he goes through, explains one piece, then he goes on to the next piece, and the next, very, in one theme. Usually one's rush is on one pasuk. Here he goes a whole parasha along, of step by step what Yaakov is doing, all within that same theme and that same idea. So over here we have, so it says, so first he sends the messengers, Lefanav. He sends the messengers, Lefanav, to Esav. And then he tells them, this is why, in love on Garti, that's what we spoke about before, the supernal whiteness, and that enabled me to construct the world of Tikkun, the Shor V'chamor, and therefore I'm sending to send you, Limtzei Chein, to find favor in your eyes, that you're going to bestow to me the Makif. The Malachim come back and they say, we came to Esav, and he's coming against you with 400 men. Meaning he's still broken, you have nothing to get from him. So Yaakov got very scared, and what did he do? We're going to see later why he divided. We'll see that soon. And he first explains the next part, and then he'll go back. Vayome Yaakov, and Yaakov says, O the Keav Avi Avram, the God of my father Abraham, O the Keav Yitzchak, and the God of my father Yitzchak, he offers a prayer to God. Hashem O'Emer Alei, Halai, God who said to me, Shuv La'artzuchem Eladcha, return to your homeland, Vativ Avdudiyun, Katointi, whatever, he petitions God to help him. But what is the meaning of this thing? Piddish, meaning, Shespal Sheyimshech Elav Amakifim, the Kedusha Shela Avis. See, but Yaakov needed assistance. If he wants to draw down the makif of Toyu, he first needs to get the lower makifim. The makifim that are closer, makifim are these higher transcendental energies that don't fit into the narrow vessels. So what Yaakov did was, in order to assist him, he first has to draw down the makifim of Kedusha. Meaning, the makifim of Toyu are way up there, that are completely be reabsorbed in God. But there is a level of makifim, and that is the Kedusha shall avis of the avis. Lazar loy, to assist him, shall yuchel lahamshech ha-makif to toy. That he should have the ability to be able to draw down the makif to toy. Shall yizgala lamata. That he should be revealed down here. Vayedeze gamkein hatzileini no miyad Esav. And that is going to help him beat Esav. Because why does Esav have, in a sense, more power than Yaakov? Why was Yaakov afraid? Because Esav has, it's in some way, a vestige, a tiny trace of that energy of Toyu, which is much more powerful, just like an animal is stronger than a human being. Why? Because it has that unadulterated energy. It has that raw potency and power. So Esav has that. Yaakov is afraid. So Yaakov says, I want to get Esav's power. That power of, therefore he's not afraid of Esav anymore. Because he now, Esav doesn't have any advantage over Yaakov. So that's why he davens first. Let to draw down Sheyuchel Laham Shechamak. Yeah. Hatzileni Nami. And what does he do? Yeah, what's your question? It's to a certain degree, Tikkun is the reconstructed chart to tell you, but Esav was that aspect that Yaakov didn't reach. The real, real, most potent levels of tell you that fell the lowest. And they were not yet rectified. So Yaakov did reconstruct to a certain degree, but the word Esav himself has not yet been affected by it. Lavan's world, the world of the sign, there he was, but he didn't, that's what it seems like. The most potent deposits of Toyu, which fell into the most evil forces, were still in the Klippa. So he couldn't work that way. So he needed to get directly the energy of, what does he do? He divides his people into two groups, two camps. The reason why he divided them dafke into two, not into more, why dafke? Because this Yaakov wanted to organize himself similar to the world of Toyu. What is the Toyu? What is the dynamics of Toyu? The dynamics of Toyu are that there's two kavim. There's chesed, there's gevura. In the world of tikkun, there's three. Because there's the middle. What is the middle supposed to do? There's chesed, there is gevura, and in the middle, teferes is beauty. Beauty is harmony. Beauty is the mixture of the various colors. What is beautiful? When you have a blend of colors, when you have a simple, just when you have symmetry, and that creates beauty. So, chesed is kindness. Gevura is judgment. Teferet is rachamim. What is rachamim? Why is rachamim a blend of chesed and gevura? Because chesed says give. Give without an end because everybody deserves. What does gevura say? Don't give to anybody because no one deserves. No one is deserving. And what does rachamim say? Rachamim says, I agree with you, gevura, that doesn't deserve, but we have to give anyways because we should have mercy. So that's why it's a blend of the two. And that's what the whole power of tikkun is really there in the middle of Teferes, which is the middle, that's why Teferes is Torah, and so we're not going to get into that now. But that's the idea of the power of tikkun is the blending of Teferes. But in the Olam HaToyu, there is no Teferes. In the Olam HaToyu, it's either Chesed or Gevura. And that's why Yaakov, in order because he wants to reach the Olam HaToyu, also organizes himself in two camps. So that he will. The main difference between the world of Toyo and the world of Tikkun, they were all, the spheres were separated one beneath the other. meaning they didn't coexist. It was either one. It says actually this week in the Parsha, in the end of the Parsha, where the whole source of Tayu comes from, one of the places, it says there was this king and he died, and then came the next king and he died. In other words, for Gevurah to come, Chesed had to die. Because as long as Chesed was there, Chesed did not allow any Gevurah. Gevurah could not enter into the scene as long as Chesed was there. Chesed collapsed, so then Gevurah came in. And then when Gevurah collapsed, that's why it says the king ruled and he died. The next king ruled and he died. So because they're one under the other. In the world of Tikkun, they're in lines, in the Hainu, Gimel Kavin, the three Kavin, Yamin Vesmail the Emta, the right, the left, and the middle. Shakav Amitsoi, it's the middle one, who Amachabir Umayachid, that's what's able to unify and unite. Gam came Beza Kavin, the Yamin Vesmail. It serves as an intermediary, as a arbiter between the two forces of right and left. That they should unite together. Ki yadu, as it is known, the teferes who are memutze bechesed the gevurah. The teferes is that combining fact with chesed. Umachabram yachad, and it united. Velakach Yisrael. That's why Jews shehem bebchinas atikun. Jews are from the world of tikun. Oimrim gimel pamim kadosh. We say three times kadosh, 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 referring to chesed, gevurah, teferes. Dafka. Iksiv behem, and it also says gamkein. You will be my chosen treasure. The word segula also means from the word segol. A segol is one of the, there is a kamatz, there's a tsere, one of the vowels, and the and then there is segol. Segol is the three dots. What is the three dots? You will be my segol. You will be that harmonizer in all of creation to bring together the fragments and the different separate, extreme, radical parts of creation and bring a symmetry and harmony amongst them. So that is Ve'yisam li segula. Sha'asegol gimul nekudos is the three nekudos. Bebchinas yamin v'smoil, the right and the left, the emtza in the middle. Ava ba'oy lamat toyu, but in the world of toyu, shahoyu bebchinas pirud, it was in a state of pirud, of separation, zetachazeh one, because they were all filled with ego and they couldn't stand the other. They didn't unite together. So it's only two. The kindness is on its own. Gevurah is on its own. It's explained elsewhere. In Toyu, the lights were, the energy was very powerful. And the kelim and the vessels were minute and small. Because the keli was so little and lifi erecha oir in comparison to the light, alken ein akeli yechay lelehechol. So the keli is not able to absorb it, to contain it. Beis afech. For example, that's what we say a child. One of the reasons why a child has that extremeness, one or the other, is because he doesn't have the broadness of mind to be able to contain in one time two opposite emotions. Either this or that. The more broader, the older someone, the more mature one's mind and thinking, you broaden your vessels. So then you're able to handle two opposite emotions at the same time. You can have hatred towards someone, but still, you temper it with kindness and so forth. Same as in the is that balance comes from what? From the broadness of the vessels. But tell you that they had quite not keli. The kelim were very small. Ein akeli yachel abeiz afechem chesed gvur yachem al derech mashal. Al derech mashal, like you find, ba adam misha sichle katan, a person who has a doesn't have a great intellectual capacity. La yachel beiz afechem klal. They can't stand. They can't contain two opposites. Elim yata sichle l'schus. If they're going, to, if he finds merit in something, la yimtza ashum seichel lachel. Cannot find any reasoning for guilt. And it can't stand. You can't even suggest any reasoning of guilt because he's thinking merit. Only merit. And the opposite. If he's leaning towards guilt, will not find any ability to think the other way. V'nimtza, eina ela bekav echad tamid. He's always in one and one kav. Pa'amim bekav ha-yamin, sometimes in the right side, l'schus, u'pa'amim bekav ha-smoil, and sometimes on the left side, l'choy. And they're separate. When he's in a chesed state, he can't stand in. This is called tucham. Chesed stands on its own and gevura stands on its own. But in the world of tikkun, that the feres coordinates and arbitrates between kindness and hagam she hainish gam b'shas adin, even at the time of judgment, yachali is gam kenetil is chus. He can find merit. The chen lahapach and the apt. The fisha betikun oiris mi otim va'akelim mi rubin. Because in tikkun, the energy, the lights are what? Are not as intense. The kelim are broad. Nimta akeli rachav, the keli is broad enough, l'kabul gamma bezafechim, to sustain two opposites. L'kumoy ba'odam shadai terachav. Like a person who is a broad-minded, yachalizbo bezafechim yachad, he can stand both. The yishkenu b'moichoy v'liboy. And it can both reside in his heart and in his shemitzad zeh yev svar l'schus. From this there is a svar l'schus. Even though from the other side there's a swear, and we can toy around with both of them. That's the idea of the three. The Omnom in this case. In this case of Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov needed to draw down the makiv of Toyu. He had to get the light of Toyu that's b'li gvul. So he needed to send up feminine waters to there to stimulate it. The yidua and in his note, shaman tzarich lios lifi oifen hamshach. That whenever you're giving feminine waters, that has to, we're transmitting a certain thing to evoke. It has to be in the same style of that which you want to draw down. Shadoytzal hamshach misham. Shalafi oifen ha'ala, in accordance to what you're bringing up, kachi hamshach. So is the response. V'hoyol v'kein, and since it is so, ma'achash betoyu ayirak beis kavin. In Toyu there were only two distinct, discrete kavin. Yaakov needed to set himself up also in this manner. That's why he divided his camp into two groups. That he should be reflecting the dynamics of the world of Toyu. Because over there, one under the other, not in the form of three. That's going to bound him. He's going to bind himself with the world of Toyu. Laham shecha or makif, to draw down the makif. Umezeh atam atzma yuvan atam. So Yaakov had to take on a certain radicalness to create a certain yet. Umezeh atam atzma yuvan atam ma shehikriv Yaakov hamincha izim asay. And that is why Yaakov sent this mincha, 200 goats. Sheinyan mincha zu Allah asma. Now he only prepared himself to send up. But now he's actually sending. That's the mincha. The mincha is, what are you sending? In the word mincha, you have man. Ma yenukvin. Man. Mincha. What the chesheh? I don't know if he explains it here, but I definitely saw something this week that explained, maybe in Teres Chaim, I'm not sure. Hu alos man lahamshecha makiv. To draw down the makiv. Hu al derech inyan ha-karbonis. Similar to what karbonis are supposed to affect. We're sending up an animal. We're sending a substance of this world up to be absorbed in the spiritual realms, to be absorbed in God's, in a godly fire, so that God will respond in kindness. Shehem Allah's man laham shechmad. This is the raising up of feminine waters to draw down the masculine light. Kenoyd va'avol piken. And nevertheless, I simin chasa shaloy al derech oifin u'mishpat akrabana shebetorah. Yaakov did not play by the rules of the Torah. He sent these weird karbanos that in nowhere in the Torah do we find this being acceptable. Usually when we send karbanos, we send only tahar animals, kosher animals. And more than that, the animals have to be first slaughtered, they have to first be killed, shchutim. And then you can elevate it after. The shchita doesn't have to be done by a kohen, but nevertheless there has to be shchita. We don't find a living animal being given as a sacrifice. Rak pesored azazel, only in the goat that is sent on Yom Kippur to azazel, and that, as we know, that's a sacrifice to Satan, to the Satan, which is a discussion unto its own. Why on Yom Kippur we send something to Satan? But that's an exemption. Vagamber karbanos, and also in karbanos loyay makrivim, and even then you never gave the whole animal, meaning you took certain parts, the chelev, only the fat and the blood went. The other parts were not offered. Generally, in most karbanos, in karban oila, the whole thing, but even then, not the skin, not the hide, and not the Right? Now take the whole thing as it is. In the world of discrimination, in the world of tikkun, everything is evaluated, everything is this can, this cannot, there is this bitter refinement. He sent a package over there, a mixture of everything. Everything tam gevarfu. Okay. There were gemalim, manikois
means what?
Nursing camel. Vagam shehen chayin, and they were alive. Veloy shchutin, and they weren't shachted. V'in yinu, and the idea is, mishum, sha'alos manshu amincha de Yaakov, because Yaakov is elevating this feminine waters, hu la'am shechmad, he wants to draw down masculine waters, mipchenas ha'makif to oilam ha'toyu, from that superior level of the makif of the world of toyu. V'aman v'hamad to oilam ha'toyu, and the man, the feminine waters, and the masculine waters of the world of tikkun, who mishunna uba'ifan acha, is very different min amanu ma'ad o'ilam ha'tikun, from the man and ma'ad of the world of tikkun. Shu inyan ha'karbanah shevetayah, that is the karbanah of Torah, that is, because Torah is what Torah is, emanates from God's wisdom, from chachma. Chachma is kayach ma, the power of tikkun. Yaakov we know is Torah, the whole truth. Shahatayru v'pchinas o'ilam ha'tikun, that's silus. Yeah, that Torah is from the world of Tikkun of Atzilus. More than that, you see something so great over here. This itself, that Yaakov is acting in so antithetical to who he is. Yaakov is so organized, and so this, and works everything according to what is correct. Yaakov over here is acting with the incorrectness of Esav. With that, everything goes, and everything goes. That too is part of the egolessness of Yaakov, that he doesn't even have to be correct. That is too is part of his bittul. If you need me to be crooked, I'll be crooked too. The man of truth, if it's not caught up in being true and being right, isn't it amazing? Yaakov's scheming that we find and all this that he's acting and assuming to tell you that's part of Esav could never act in a tikkun way, because the point of tell you is to act according to your nature. It's full of being self-oriented, but the point of tikkun is not about me. So even my correctness and even my straightness and morality and this and that too is for a purpose, not just because this is a thing. And therefore Yaakov can now assume, I guess this was the ultimate test in a sense, and can he go into Tayu mode? He was able to do that too. V'hainu ki oilu matikun, the world of tikkun. Sha'atayru, one more second. Sha'atayru b'chinas oilu matikun d'atzilus, because Tayru stems from the world of tikkun of atzilus, from the world of rectification. V'hainu ki oilu matikun hu b'chinas oir pnimi. Oilu matikun means, the point of oilu matikun is that the light has to be registered and absorbed and internalized in a keli. So if to be internalized in a keli, the keli has to be fitting. That's the whole point of tikkun, that it has to be absorbed inside to the keli. So not everything is fitting. Just like when you have an idea to give, you know, there's this student that can handle it, this student, you shouldn't tell him this, because he doesn't know what to do with it. It will corrupt him. So everybody has to be given that which they can. That's when you're going to give in an or panini. So therefore, it discriminates. This is yeah, and this not. Sha'oidus mitzamtzavin, because the lights get contracted. V'nitzvasim b'toich ha'keli, and they get grasped in the keli. V'ma'acha sha'or yochel esyasha b'toich ha'keli, and this itself, that the light is able to fit in a vessel. Zehu hayra, this is a indication. Sha'kvar nitzamtzim ma'or b'tzimtzumim ravim, that the light has already been contracted in many contractions. K'mo shekasu be'et chayim, sha'betikun ha'oiris mi'utim, that the tikkun, the world, the light, are in it. The reason why the Torah in everything is so full of tzimtzum, full of constrictions and limitations and confinement and so forth, is because it's already an energy that has been limited and contracted and focused, as opposed to the unfocused light. So the Torah tells you exactly. Say that Allah Osman, the order of the Allah Osman, the tikkun. Hakol bediktukim, everything with extreme diktuk and precision. Shul mishpat maisar karbanis, and you realize how the Torah is so into it. It goes into the guts of the animal, and it says you should take the diaphragm and the kishkis and take along the whole sefer Vayikra is dissecting animals in such a, because that's the point. You're going to elevate, you're going to bring something up, it has to be proper, correct, everything has to fit, everything. Sheyim behemoth toyim, it's only from the pure animals. V'gimel mina behemoth levad, and only even from the kosher animals, only from the three types, because these are types, these animals, it says, are more submissive, so they have more bittul. So even though an animal is be'etzem a toyu, they're a creature, but within the world of toyu, domestic animals are not as intense, as ego, as detached from God as the undomestic animals. You see that they allow themselves to be harnessed and led and guided to serve a higher purpose. So that's why the Torah says these animals you can elevate, but coarser and more rougher than them, you have to, then you can't. And then even then you can't take the animal to really integrate it. Oh, you can't take it as it is. You have to take its life, its passion out. You're left only with the material, then you can reconstruct it. As long as the energy is there, v'shiyah shchutin, it has to be shecht. V'yesh harbe dvarim shakar benifs. And then even when you're shechting it, so many things that can ruin it. If you by mistake thought this, or you did that, or the knife is not exactly whatever, then the whole thing is for the garbage. V'chein be'inyan ha'akrava. Also the way, eich, how, uma, and what. Harbe diktukin. Ki kol ha'toyra huzda b'derech zeh. Because the entire Torah is founded on this, with tzimtzumim u'medidos, with the tzimtzum and measurements. But neishiv chenas ha'tikun, because it stems from the world of tikun. Sha'oyris mitzimtzamim teich ha'kelim, that the oyer is contracted and condensed in the kelim. L'chein medakdik gam kein bekamim min tzimtzumim v'dedukim. That's why the Torah is also very precise and discriminate in all these constrictions. Aval Yaakov he'leman l'b'chenas ha'makiv the Torah. But Yaakov sent up the man in the realms of Torah. Which is a great light that is ain't soif. That's why the keli can't contain it, because it's ain't soif. The nisha of chenas makiv, and that's why it remains aloof. It remains beyond. L'chein shalacha mincha shuala sman l'shani. Sent it over there. Af bebehemayz temeyayz gemala manikayz. That's why he sent camels, nursing camels, and all these things. The kilan oyachayin, and they all were alive. V'lo yishchut. Since the light is endless, it's infinite, there is no limitations and contractions. He's able to withstand, he's able to take it all. So before he can draw in or connect even to the most ungodliest of beings. Af temeyim, and even if they're impure, v'sheiyu chayin, and generally it says that klipa receives its energy from tayu, because God, that's where the ultimate tolerance. God can tolerate everything. There's no end to his tolerance. He can tolerate even the biggest criminal. They derive their energy from tayu because that they're connected. Because they're so bad, the only way they can exist is because. So, but and here when Yaakov was entertaining the world of tayu, he needed to give these things that. There's no a Kamayim Rezal, as the sages tell us. Once we will act gabachazir, the sages tell us about the pig. That in the future it's going to become Mashiach comes, or in the future it's going to be the chazir itself is going to become kosher. That the death is going to be removed. And then that God Himself is going to be revealed. The yachol gam chazir lis alis. And even the pig, who represents the ugliest of all beings, can also be elevated. Ma'ashen ken ata, but now, until the world is rectified, we can't go that route. I just want to finish to the dot. Elachain, and therefore, Yaakov, Shashalach HaMincha LeEsav, Yaakov that sent to you, Shehu Allah's man lemakiv to tell you, which is rising up the feminine waters to tell you, Shebebchinas Ein Sof, which is infinite, Shalach Gam Kein Dvarim Temeim. He sent also the impure, non-kosher. That's why he also sent camels. Ki adraba, because on the contrary, shorshan shen gemalim hu ma'oid naila. The root of camels is in a very, very high place. I was always intrigued by camels. There's just something about a camel. It's just a very different kind of creature. It's not like a normal animal, it just has a whole different. So he says that camels, oh my. Now they're in a low state, they're non-kosher, but in their source, camels have a very, very, very high source. That's why Eliezer, when Eliezer was going to bring about the Shidduch of Yitzhak and Rivka, which we know was the actual marriage of the cosmos, of the high and the low of heaven and earth. Yitzchak and Rivka embodied the connection of Torah and the Jewish people. It was awesome that he went, and the Torah is elaborating on his camels, and he's bringing camels, because the camels play an integral part in that story. Shalokach, and he took 10 camels. Shalokach Yud Gemal. Megamal, why 10? He didn't take 9 camels. No, those camels, there were 10, because V'chol Tuv Adoina V'yodai. And it says, on the camels, he carried all the goodies of his master. Which means that the camels are associated with the goodies of the master, with the highest things. V'inyin Kegamul Aleimai. The camels are associated with the little infant that's nursing on its mother. It's called Kegamul, like a little infant baby that's nursing on its mother. It's called the Gamul. Camel is associated with something so close to that divine source, like the nursing baby. But kol zeh lehal yachalas is rak Yaakov. But here's just an amazing thing. Someone is reading this. Says, you know what? So why don't we go to the hookah cafe now? If there is a method of getting up without of all this, so who needs all this tzimtzumim of Torah and mitzvahs? Why don't we go back to the 60s, where everything goes, and we'll all just have love. And it'll be just that everybody will love everybody, and we'll remove all boundaries and borders, and we'll have that powerful energy of the Beatles, and who knows what. So just go back to that time of this. So because this works, and that time, so the Rebbe says, no, that was only Yaakov was able to do that, b'koy de matan Torah. That was before the Torah was given. Avla nachnu, but us, kvar nitan lanu haTorah. The Torah was given to us, mifchenas ha-tikun, from the world of tikun, umashu hu tamei v'asur, and that which is impure and is asur al pi ha-Torah, hu meruchik, is completely removed, and we cannot engage it, and we can't try to integrate it and try to play any shtick and manipulate in any ways by dividing it to two camps and playing this won't work. So la yochel is alis klal, and we can't elevate. V'hikareis tekareis anefesh ba'achlechem. And the soul that eats chaylev is totally cut off from God. Because the only interaction, the only way to interact with their energy is only through the system of Torah. No other way can work. Okay, Yoitzer is no. Yaakov, yeah, you had a question. You have like 10 questions already. Yeah. That's what he also now. He's saying that you can't play around with that now. Before Matan Torah, yeah, there you go. Yeah, in a sense. Vayakim balailahu, and they got up. No, but I don't know. The reform movement, there's no energy there at all. It's just stam garnish. But he's not dead. I'm talking. But where you love everybody and everything, and there's no discrimination at all in terms of, you know, yeah, that's that. Vayakim balailahu. So then Yaakov woke up that night and continued. Vayikach hashtei nashav. He went and he took his two wives. Vayavay das maver yavik. He crossed the crossing of Yabok. So, now, this must be containing something. That Yaakov, on that evening, when he's preparing to send, he sends the mincha, and then he's busy crossing the river of Yabok. He transported his whole family over the Nachal, over the river. This takes us back to the Maimah we learned 2 weeks ago, about the big river that gushes forth from Eden, which that river is basically the world, the energy as it is flowing from Chachma, from the world of Tikkun. But when Yaakov now has to get to the Keser, he has to get to the crown, he has to get to the encompassing energies from beyond the world of Tikkun, so he has to cross the river. He has to go to the Eivar Anar, to the other side of the river. Because this side of the river is dominated under the influences of Tikkun. So he has to get past it. Pidish Yabok, the word Yabok, it comes is a Rosh Hashanah for three words: Yichud, Bracha, Ukedusha, the unification of blessing and holiness. That's what Yabok stands for. Yichud, unifying, Bracha, and Kedusha and holiness. That's the idea. Bracha and Kedusha, the fusion of Bracha and Kedusha. Bracha is when we say Hakadosh Baruch. So we have that in Hakadosh Baruch Hu, when God, you have that combination of Kadosh and Baruch. Baruch is what? The Shechina, that element of God that's vested in the creation. Kadosh is that which transcends, and the Yichud and the unity of both of them. The Inyan, and the idea is, the Hinek Siv, it says, David Anon on the other side of the river, Yoshua Avisechem. Your father stemmed from the other side of the river. Me'oilam, from Eb. What are the fathers? The fathers are the emotions, Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Yaakov. So even though we said that in the Jewish world, in the dynamics of Judaism, it's supposed to be intellectual emotions. The emotions are supposed to be guided by the Chachmah. But really, the source of the emotions, we said even the emotions that are guided by the mind, their original source is in the essential character of the soul beyond the mind, in the super conscious levels of the soul. It's only that the mind serves as a filter to let them through. So really, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is really what? They come from the other side of the river. The river represents the intellect. The mind is called the thought, and that's called the river because it's constantly flowing. Pidish Hanar uPchinas Bina. The river Nachayvay Hanar Bina is called the broad river. Eden. Eden is allegorically connected to Chachma, and the river that stems from Eden is the river, the Bina that comes from Chachma. Shoyrish Avos and the root of the Avos, whomEver Hanar, the other side of the river. Haynu uPchinas HaKeser Shulamayla Mahanar. The root of the Avos is from Keser, that is beyond. Meaning, in simple words, it means that the Jew who's supposed to live a life so dominated by what? Mm-hmm. By Seichel and so forth, inherently in his inner side is supposed to have the raw, radical passion and insanity of Shtus, of total, that because that's really where it all stems from. What the Rebbe spoke when the Rebbe said we need to have Oyres the Toyu and Kalim the Tikkun and Mashiach in order to bring Mashiach. That the idea that Be'etzem, the Yid love to Hashem is not Seichel. It's from his inherent being. That's where our fathers really stem from. But we can't, in order to rectify the world, we can't, we need to work through the filter of Tikkun. Yaksha Masham Nimshachu Avos. The Avos really stem from there. V'nishpalu l'mata be'ever Hasheni shel Anar. And they manifest themselves on the other side of the river. Like we said, our love to Hashem, what generally triggers our love? Contemplation. So it looks like we love God because of what? Because we understand Him. Because you have some appreciation in mind. But really, the love is what? A natural love. That's its original source, but that's not the way it is experienced in our conscious experience. So they came down on the other side, Bizad Atzilus and Zav Atzilus and Ze'er Rampin of Atzilus, which is Bracha and Kedusha. Because Zav Atzilus is, Malchus is called Bracha, and the six emotional attributes are called Kedusha. So the Avos really come down on the other side of Yablik, but their original source is from Be'evin Anah. The Yaakov, we're not going to get into that at great length now, because it's not that much integral, that important for the Maimer over here. The Yaakov, Shadot HaShayam Shachloi HaMakav Detayu, and Yaakov, that desire, that the mark of the Torah should come to him, Hanel Shalifnei Atzilus, Hutzrich Metchila Laver Asanar, needed to cross this river. In simple words, it means he needed to, within himself, he needed to get to it, he needed to find his essential emotions, instead of, he had to bypass his mind. He had to find his own raw energy that is contained within him, that Yaakov really had. V'zel v'yavar es maver yavik. He crossed the river of Yavik. Kibchinas yichud bracha kedusha hu hakol bchinas nar hanal is all in the river. Shal yodin imshuchu kalashpaz v'yichud ares al yaynim, in which through the river comes the unification of all the spurnal lights. K'mo shekasev anar yotzei me'eden lahashkes esagan. U'kasha aver asanar, but when he crossed the river, v'higi al bchinas shalamaylu ma'anar, and he arrived to a level that transcends the river, hanal oz le'rachikum in ha'makiv detayu. He isn't far from the makiv of tayu, haniskal el shalifnei atzilus. He's not there yet, but he's not far from it. He's already past the river, in the other side. He already entered the world of chaotic energy, of energy that is uninhibited, that is unrestricted, that is in its infinite demand. V'zel v'yaver as ha'shaloi. And then, more than that, Yaakov didn't only go over himself, but he took everything that was with him. Meaning, everything that he rectified, he brought along with him onto the other side of the river. He imbued them all with this intense komashatikun hela hakalasham. He brought them all over to the other side. Ach, however, he took everything over, but he himself went back. Achu ba'atzmoi nishalamata dai. He went back down below. Kamashakasava Yavasa Yaakov Levada. That Yaakov remained alone. And the reason for that was because he couldn't forget about his brother Esau. Esav was still fallen. Esav, not Esav's source, but Esav, as he was his brother down here, was still a shattered vessel down here below. So Yaakov wanted to pick Esav up, so he couldn't go up there, even though that's Esav's source. But Esav down here is not connected to it, so he had to stay down here in the pleasant state of Tikkun, where Tikkun rectifies the shard. So he wanted to fix Esav up. He wanted to help Esav back. He wanted to rehabilitate Esav. Shuadayim b'shvir. K'moy shehediyu ha-malachim, like the malachim told him. V'zeu inyin v'ya'ovik ish imoy. And that's the idea that he struggled with him. Yaakov was struggling with the malach of Esav. His struggle with it was his fight with Esav down here in order to purify him and to elevate him. That was the wrestling going on. Now the Alter Rebbe is going to go back. Why did Yaakov want so much to get the energy of Toyo? Why is that so important? What's wrong if he... So he's not going to have the intense light of Toyo. What's wrong just sufficing with the energy of Tikkun? To understand this, the Gan Yuvan Zeb Avodas Hashem. To understand this all in one's personal Avodas Hashem. Hine Yedua is known the Yaakov Ubchenas Teferis. That Yaakov is the idea of Teferis. Shemachabe Bezafech. Teferis is what connects the two opposites. Shemchesed the Gevura, which are Chesed and Gevura. Kedei Eskalel is Bezafezim. Yachadu Ikra Teferis. Beauty comes from two opposites being combined. Kamoi Begavonim, just like in colors. Kshemachav and Bezo Gimel Gavonim. Yachadu Ikra Yoifi. Real beauty comes when two colors or three colors are blended together. Amshachas Vizgalis Oirin Tzoyf Bekavam Tzoyf. And where does God Himself reside? Only in the middle, because where there is harmony, we learned this in Parshas Noach. Where there is unity, that's why the Dor HaFlagah wanted to create a unity, superficial unity, so that the Ein Sof is going to reside. So, being that Yaakov is all about harmonizing the opposites, for that very reason, he wanted to connect Tayu and Tikkun, because these two are opposites. Tayu is about. Is about the uninhibited, and the tikkun is the inhibited. So he wanted to combine two impossibilities because that's the ultimate challenge of the world of teferis, to bring opposites together. So which means literally to have. If you imagine a Jew who is extremely following the lines of halacha, really the guidelines, living a life to the utmost dictates of Shulchan Aruch, but he's full of charged energy. It's not a dry human being. He's full of explosive life. That's an amazing combination. And that's a chassid. That's what a chassid is. Here you go. Chassid is there we go. That's supposed to. Yeah. The Yachad Gam Kenamak of the Toyum are Pnoy the Tzikun. Yeah, really, because before the days of Chassidim, the people got so caught up in the nitty gritty of Yiddishkeit, and it became just that without the energy. They lost the soul. They lost energy. That's what the Baal Shem Tov came to do. He came to draw the Oiris to Tayu into the Kalim of Tikkun, especially the Alter Rebbe, because he brought it all in into the Kalim. Things that are real, right?
When Yaakov will get back to get his Kalim,
he doesn't mention. He mentioned that Yaakov went to get the Kalim because he went to transport all that he accomplished into that. And what do you gain from that? That what is going to be revealed is something higher than Tayu and of Tikkun. The real Oirin Tzoyf is revealed when there is harmony of Tayu and Tikkun. An explanation of the matter is, as if like someone he didn't explain anything, but to explain it now. There's two levels in Avodas Hashem. One is ahava berish payesh. One is a love where one is loving God with a flaming love. Betagburis ma'oid, with an extreme intensity. Latzeis menaguf, one experienced such a powerful surge of longing and yearning and pining for God that the love wants to break free from the body, that soul wants to break out of the body. Uluparid menapsila. It wants to abandon the wick. The wick, the body is called the wick, just like a fire that is wants to tear itself away, wants to go upward. So to the soul is Sama Nafshi Lalokim. My soul is yearning for God. Nichtafava gam kolsa nafshi. Vahu b'chinas ahava rava. This is called great love. She'ein kli alev machila oisa. That the vessels of the heart cannot contain it. Ki lo yaychul halev. because the heart cannot contain his pilus atzuma. Such an overpowerful, it's an abundant experience, the heart is just bursting. And that's why he feels that he can't remain in his body. Because in the body he feels constrained, and he wants to go out from its container, the corporal body, so that it can experience true divine attachment. That's one type of love. And that comes in a way where, Vabez is the second one. Then there is also another type of a motivation. That's one type of Jew who experiences the love of Hashem in a way where he wants to escape the planet. He wants to escape this world. And even while, you know, you can't just leave. You can't exit when you want. Yeah, when Hashem wants, that's when you leave. But nevertheless, he lives a life in a way where he abandons the body because he just can't stand and he just goes into some, let me say, chaotic existence. Just totally trend. Now, he's going to give an example of that soon. The second one is a person who is, also there's a motivation. He's talking both levels in Avodas Hashem. So the guy's motivated. But everything is limited, calm, because he thinks everything is extremely... something that there is a love, but the love settles in the heart. The ikir in yana, and the main content of this type of Jew, this Jew wants to draw God's light into the world, be expressed in creation. As opposed to the Jew who wants to meet God up there, this Jew wants to have God down here in this world expressed in holy behavior. Daft, Mikaelim Shainim, the various different vessels, the Torah mitzvahs and Torah mitzvahs. The Zeru Inyan, Ratzai Veshuv. And this is the idea of Ratzai and Shuv, because Ratzai is that desire of to escape it all. Shuv is to return back. The dominant force in Tayu is that the Oyer can't settle in the Keli. So it's the Oyer, it comes into the Keli but doesn't want to sit there. So because it wants to, the energy is, so therefore it was in a state of Ratzai. That's why the Oyer is retracted and they went away. It's similar to this great love. Liparid min apsila, wants to go away from sila vake, it wants to go away from the wick in the kingdom. In a sense, it's also associated with ego, because the Jew who acts in this way, so you would think he's a holy moly, whatever. He's a holy guy. But the problem is that he's really obsessed with himself, because that's his own desire. He wants it. God is not going to have anything from that. For your soul, for your personal bliss and sensation, this is wonderful. But what is God going to have? So again, that has the character of Tayu, which loses focus that there is a mission and a purpose, becomes about me. So it's a holy ego, but nevertheless an ego anyway. Avala tikkun hu b'china shoy. Tikkun is full with the aspect of shuv, the returning energy, going down. Hu b'china Torah mitzvahs, they are containers. Hu bakar chachatachat. That I surrender myself to life, I live against my will. I take it, don't want to, because I'd rather, much rather, but I submit to the purpose of existence to be down here below and to take care of my family and to inspire other people, to bring the light of God to others, even though that means compromising a lot on my own spiritual dance. About karchachatachai, liyos betoicha guf, to be in the body. Lahamshich oirin soif bekelem akelem shoinim. To draw down the Ein Sof in the gift. This is also the difference between the four that went into the orchard. We spoke earlier. Ben Azai hits its v'meis. Ben Aka gazed, he looked, and he died. Ben Zoyma hits its v'nifga. Ben Zoyma went in there, he took one look, one stare at that of that very, very awesome place, and he got mentally... Rak Rabbi Akiva says, Nichnas b'shalom v'yatzah b'shalom. Akiva entered in peace, and he went out in peace. Why? Ki ben Azai ho b'b'chines ratzai. Ben Azai was in this ratzai, that's why he's called Azai. Azai means as strong and hard. So he was in that state of ratzai, the Hava Rabba Hanal, that great love. B'b'chines klois ha-nefesh, soul expiring for longing for God. V'loi ratzai li'es nishpal b'b'chines shuv. He didn't want to enter into shuv, into a settled, structured life. Lekach, therefore, we find that he didn't get married. He didn't want to get married because he liked that freedom. Getting married means setting up a family and being anchored down here. He didn't want that. He wanted that. But Omar, and he said, he said, the world needs to be, let others have children. Let others create a family. I am enlightened and looking for something beyond. That's why he died. That he completely departed from the keli. He didn't die. This is what he wanted. He wanted to die, and he got what he wanted. Ki aza kamava sahava, because his love was as intense as death. Meaning, his love brought him to die. Achen ein zaderech haTorah, is not what the Torah wants. Shehu bebchinas tikkun. Torah is in a state of tikkun. Ki l'sheves yitzara, because Torah is when the Baal Shem Tov came and the Baal Shem Tov introduced Hasidism, and remember the truths. The word Hasidim, like the Kalasker Hasidim. That they were mad. They literally were mad. They would dance and jump and make somersaults and tumblesaults in the street. And that's why the Masnagdim, the opposing forces, now it's coming, thought they're totally nuts. And they said they're crazy. And they said they have to put a ban on him because he's that crazy. Now, you expect them not to be crazy? When they heard a mimer, they danced. They went crazy. I don't know, but there's something wrong with us. We're totally we're... No, that's the word. Impotent. What is the word? No, I forget it. So there's something. But they heard these things. They went crazy. They went berserk. They hear such, and that's the way it should be in a sense. But the Alter Rebbe said, hold it. We got the energy. Now we have to figure out a way to draw it into the Kelim of Tikkun and put it in. And therefore, the author says that that's not the way of the Torah. Derech shu b'chinas tikkun, ki l'sheves yitzara. U'bal karchach atachai. That's why the Alter Rebbe was the revealer of the greatest secrets. Also created a Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch meaning you have to listen and abide by the laws of Shulchan Aruch. U'bal karchach atachai. And against your will, you have to live. L'chein Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva. Shahoy m'b'chinas tikkun. Rabbi Akiva stems from the world of tikkun. That's where Rabbi Akiva is the main bedrock of all of Torah, or it's all based on the teachings of Rabbi Akiva, because Torah is tikkun. So nichnas b'shalom v'yatza b'shalom. He entered in peace and he went out in peace. Shahaya hamanu machaloi. He had a good balance in his feminine waters and masculine waters, meaning his desire to rise and it balanced it with an equivalent return to earth. Dahainu b'chinas harotzei v'shuv b'mido mezigin achayna. We're well tempered. He entered in peace. And the point is that when he went in already also purposeful, the Rebbe says. He didn't just go in because he wanted to experience. He went in because, which is the middle, that combines and unifies both of the rightness. Ratzai comes from the left. Shuv comes from the right. And he was that. And that's why his Allah Shmanshu in Yisha Nichnas Tapardes b'midu meziga nachayne. It was well balanced. B'chinas Ratzav v'shuv v'nechnas b'shalom b'chinas man. He went in peace, meaning his mayan nukvin. V'yatzav b'shalom b'chinas m'shachas mad. And he came out in peace. The masculine waters were all measured b'chinas shuv. Ma'ashen came ben Azai, which is in the case of ben Azai. Shashor shalim b'chinas tayu. Ben Azai really came from the world of tayu. That's why he had this chaotic energy. Shashama b'chinas shnei kavin. There were two. K'nis kliyel b'inyav ayachas. He could not combine the Ratzai and the Shub in Mezigin Achayin and Vehitzitz V'meis. When he went into Ratzai, he went into single-moded Ratzai, and there was nothing stopping him. His Gabris HaRatzai. That's where Rabbi Akiva is the source of the entire Torah Shulchan. Kistam Mishnah Rameya, because the main, whenever it doesn't say a name in the Mishnah, it's going according to Rameya. Kistam Safra Rabbi Yehuda. And the Safra, when it doesn't say a name, it's Rabbi Yehuda. And they're all the disciples of Rabbi Akiva. The Kilu Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. They're all just transmitting the because Rabbi Akiva is that world of Tikkun who can balance it all. Because Torah is also Tikkun. Torah has that synchronizing. As it says by Torah, from his right side, fire. The right side is water. The left side is fire. Torah is that Eish das lamai, the fire and the water mixed together. That's why the revelation of Torah was to Rabbi Akiva. Shahayi b'bchinazu, he had this level. Kiniskali al said above. Ata, now we understand Indian Kavanas Yaakov. What Yaakov wanted, when Yaakov wanted to connect Toyu and Tikkun, Yaakov was somewhat said like this. Yaakov wanted, generally a person who lives in the world of Tikkun is lacking that energy of Ratzai. His Ratzai is not as intense. What Yaakov wanted, that the Jews who are the very organized, directed, focused, intellectually focused Jew, when he experienced Ratzai, it shouldn't be a weak Ratzai. It should be the same Ratzai of Ben Azai, in a sense. That same intense Ratzai, which is wild, explosive, and Toyu. But nevertheless, the Oyer of Toyu should settle into the Kelim of Tikkun. Elachain, and therefore, Kavanas Yaakov Charet, Chaber HaMakev de Toyu, and Ma'or V'Kelim de Tikkun. Hayne Sheyiyu Tamid Ratzai V'Shoi B'Meziga Acha, should be well bound. Shelefi Erech HaRatzai Kein HaShuv. That according to the Ratzai, should be the Shuv. Hayne Sheyiyu Ahava Rabba B'Rish Be'esh. The love should be with flaming clothes. Liparet Min HaPsila. And that moment one is ready to burst out from the containers. The afal pikein, that's the main word over here. And even notwithstanding the fact that the ratzai is as intense as Benazai's ratzai, ye'achakach b'china shuv le'echad, one should return to life and be a normal human being in this world. Even though during davening, he's totally crazy. Rabbi Akiva, when he davened, would start in one room, and he would end in the other end of the room. And this is the man who is the source of Torah. So you would think the last thing of Rabbi Akiva was that he would allow himself such. That's the trick, the combination of Ratzai and Shuv. Then you force yourself back to life. And because the source of Torah is really from beyond Ratzai, beyond Shuv, you're totally nullified to God's will. Whatever Hashem wants. God wants you to have Ratzai, so you have Ratzai. God wants you to have Shuv, so you have Shuv. That's why both of them it says, Balkarchach Atachai, or Balkarchach Atameis. In other words, it's not like Ratzai is what I want. If the only reason you're going into the Ratzai is because you want it, then you're not going to be able to slam down on the brakes. You're going to get so carried away by that Ratzai, you're going to lose it. So that's why the only way you can have a Ratzai that will later result in a Shuv and returning back, Ratzai means a running, and a Shuv and coming back, is only if when you're going into the Ratzai, you're going in because that's what God wants it. And when you're totally battle to Hashem, then you're able to combine the two opposites. And that's what Rabbi Akiva had. Nichnas b'shalom v'yatzei b'shalom. To be, yeah. So now, v'zev shekasev, v'arei zeh, and that's what we mean, b'karchach ata meis. Meis meaning Ratzai. Against your will, you're dying, meaning you're leaving the body. You're not going because you want. You're going because it's what God wants. And then when you reach the peak of that point where you really desire this, and you turn back, Hashem wants you to bring his life back and forth and back. Oh, b'kar chatachai la'am shachar nesef l'mata davke b'tayr mitzvah. Arei ze yichud v'skabrus ha-makif t'tayu, the makif of tayu im kelim b'tikun. Because kelim b'tikun is the shul, and the makif t'tayu is the ratzai. V'zeo shakasa v'yakoy v'yavu l'yad. Says v'yakoy, that they brought him wine. Yaakov brought wine to Yitzchak. He brought a vayesh and he drank. Pidish b'zoyar, the Zoyar says that, what do you mean Yaakov brought wine? To arma maya l'goy chamra. He mixed water in the wine. The Zoyar says that when it says that Yaakov brought wine, he mixed the water with the wine. Wine represents bina. Yain is associated with the energy of bina, because wine has taste. Bina, understanding something, so a taste. So yayin is, so bina, through understanding, what does that produce? That produces the ratzai, the extreme desire to aspire. But then the water is what flows downward. Water is the bittul of chachma, to surrender yourself and say, you know what, this is what I want, this is Hashem. So the pouring the wine with the water is that combination that Yaakov wanted. Same idea when he did later, when he wanted to bring the iris to tell you in the Kelim of Tikkun. Zeh shkasu b'Yaakov yavala yayin, pirish b'zoy d'ar, ki yayin u'b'chines ratzai, gevuris, v'rish b'eish m'mata l'mayin. On the Mizbeach also, generally we poured wine, but on Sukkot they poured wine and water. Combine the ratzai with the shuv. Yaakov ar mimaya b'b'chines shuv. He mixed it and blended it with the shuv. And Achayna, therefore, Vayavel Ayayin, he brought him wine, who betrayed Taima. Is in two shuvs. Vayavel Ayayin has two, I guess, if you look at these traps, so Vayavel Ayayin is two. Shehu is Kavalas HaRatze V'shuv, Mayim V'yayin, if they combine them both. Achayn Issa, the Yaakov, him Shlima Davon. That's why Yaakov is known to be the perfect one of the fathers. Eloi Kavram, Sheyatzim, and Yishmael. When Avram Avinu came out, Yishmael. And Yitzchak had Esau. Why? Because they were, in a sense, they didn't, in one, even though they weren't from the world of Tayu, but they still had that remnant, in a sense, that they were one mode, concentrated in one mode. And from that can ultimately evolve in Klipa. In order for it to be contained without, in, so there is the proper blend of kindness and severity. Kiyaka Shaya, Kipnesha Avram, it is a chesed, a pashad, almost simple kindness, below the ziga, not really tempered, without the kachnes pashad, yaisa medaya, went too far. Achi amala Yishmael, to Yishmael said it ever. The Yitzchak, I became a dura. And Yitzchak was in the state of the world. It's a big challenge for Chabad house today's day. We want to go out there, we want to open up and do it with everybody. And people are losing that ability to discriminate and have a certain toughness. You know, this doesn't go. You know, when you think that everything is just love and everybody, and then you break down the halacha and certain things because you want to just reach and always remember that the Rebbe said always makarvon the Torah. You can't bring the Torah to people. You have to bring the people to the Torah. It's a very difficult balance of that ratzei and shuv of yes, not being stuck up. On the opposite, you have people who are stuck up in Torah and they can't relate to anybody else. They don't know how to relate to them. So that's the Nezika. That's what Chabad is supposed to be and Chassidus is supposed to be. It's that idea. Yitzchak ben Zvur. Rabbi Yaakov Shlima Davon is the perfect one. It's Kavalos HaFeichem Ratzei V'Shuv Kenitzko Yael. And it's so interesting that this minor of Pashas Vayishlach is really the week before Yitzchak Kislev. And this is what the whole point of Yitzchak Kislev is all about. And the earth and the revelation of Chassidus is the bringing down the Eiris to tell you in Kalim, in the Meichen, in the Kalim, so that it has focus and direction. All right.